Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor Blood versus Water. I'm your host, Shannon Guth, here to talk about week five, just the two episodes now this week, and I'm pretty sure going forward. So we have a lot to talk about. It was an emotional week. It was a big merge. Money was given out at a ridiculous amount of money. Some real life stuff coming into it, just a lot going on. And I couldn't think of a better person to talk it all through with, someone that I love talking to all the time about Survivor and everything else. Please welcome the Mel to my Michelle, my mirror twin, Mike Bloom. Mike, thank you for being here.
So good, Shannon. How's your fang doing today? On what which side is it on yours?
You know, no one's ever asked me how my fang is. Like, that's nice to be
asked.
That's
the first thing I ask. Yeah. That's my welcoming to line everyone. To every room that I walk in. Well, listen, last time I was on, we were talking about vampires. Now fangs got brought up. Do you think the reason why Mel got taken out is because they were onto it? They knew who she was, that she truly was a creature of the night?
Yeah, no, that's what we didn't see. So that's because people are so mad about the voice, but you're missing that crucial context, and it's vampire related.
I mean, listen, we literally could not see her in the reflection of the camera because she's a vampire. So I think the invisibility makes a lot of sense.
Mike, it's been such an intense week. Like, it was a heavy week of Survivor. Like, you know what Survivor's like? It's real, and it, like, seeps into you, and you, like, it was, feelings were felt. And we are 1 minute into this podcast, and you have an extensive Mel is a Vampire theory, and I just want to thank you so much for being who you are. Like, truly, in every way, thank you. Thank you.
I mean, you're incredibly welcome. Save the gratitude for, like, 3 hours from now when you're like, get this guy off my podcast.
No,
but look, I'm here. I'm ready to talk about this. I have dressed for the occasion in honor of the new merge tribe. I am coated entirely in lava. I am in blistering pain, but
verifying.
That's not too dissimilar from how the fandom is feeling about Australian Survivor this past week. So I think it's good to get in that headspace as well.
Brilliant stuff. I mean, it's an audio podcast. Anyone can say anything, but, you know, I can confirm just head to toe lava. I was going to come on and do, like, it's like you're my mirror. Whoa, as my song. But now I'm like, well, she can't be seen in the mirror. So many.
No,
thought,
well,
yeah.
Oh. Okay, I got one here. You got ready? I'm going to build out the promo. Ready? This is a man's world. Bulp, bulp. Cut to, I don't know, Ayers Rock. Josh being like, we got the stranglehold on the game. This is a man's world. Bulp, bulp. The strong sis, we're in control. This is some sort of weird Jordy confessional. But it wouldn't be nothing. Cut to Sam silhouette on the rocks. Nothing. Without a woman or a girl. And then cut to, I don't know, a bunch of, like, badass women walking forward out of the water or something, however many women are left. And that, I think, is what people are vibing with right now, Shannon. They're saying, this is a man's world in Australian Survivor. And we are here to say, maybe not for long. It was a weird week, but not for long. That's my takeaway from this week.
Yeah, I feel like what we need is the promo that's like, let's go, girls. Dun, dun, dun. But dramatic, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's gonna be so many songs. I don't want to tease it before it's happened, but Speaking of, so we're going to have a lot of fun today. We're going to talk about the season. We're going to talk about all the, you know, dramatic things that happened this week. But I wanted to cue you because I got a memo request from Mick Broom. and also, could you not have come up with... Anyway, whatever. Mick Broom and...
That's one of my fake names. That's one of my pseudonyms.
One of? What are the, what are the others?
Do you not have multiple pseudonyms?
No. Why would I...
Oh, my God.
Why do you have questions? Questions about...
Listen, Shannon, I lead so many secret lives. I'm my own really? Slashy, and so I have several aliases. Eric Tomlinson is one that I have talked about previously. That was my go-to for a while when I did a lot of online ORGs, online role-playing games. I would use Eric Tomlinson because I was afraid my identity would be stolen or I'd be doxxed. fun fact, once played an online game with Colton Cumbie of Survivor, voted his ass out. He was not very happy.
Before your time.
When I was like 17 years old. Mick Broom is another one. I would like to think that he is like a Scruffy the janitor type from Futurama. Maybe it's a little bit of like nominative. Yeah, exactly. Like a little bit of nominative determinism. Like he can only utilize the broom. But yes, Mick Broom, my cousin from Canada.
No, friend is what I heard.
Oh, my friendly cousin sent you a memo request.
Yes, thank you.
I was stunned. You know, the community is feeling it this week. It's tough, though. We'll certainly get into it. There are bright spots to look ahead to, but I was so happy to wake up this morning and my email box was just filled to the brim. But right at the top, the layer of whipped cream at the top of the trifle that is my Gmail was this memo request from Shannon Gus. And it's an incredible message.
Well, this is what Mick said, because I got it, like, the context, because you don't know what was asked.
No, I had no idea. I didn't know what Mick prompted you to say.
Yeah, so Mick said, my friend is facing a campaign of getting fired from his podcasting job for making multiple winner picks. Please let him know this is not only suitable, but actually ingenious. Also, please rate the choice on the juicometer from one to juice. So, why are you laughing? Why are you laughing at your...
Oh, Mick.
You went too deep. You're like,
Mick,
too deep.
You rake. you rake, Mick. Oh, you're so churlish.
Anyway, you haven't listened to it. I'm really proud of this memo. I'm really proud of all of my members. I did a memo so long that it had to be uploaded by management in the back end because it was too big to upload. I'm really excited with how memo is going. So
you literally broke the internet. So we should mention this as well. If you haven't listened to the podcast last week with Nick, and you should, it's incredible. You plugged your memo at the end. So memo, is it like Australian cameo?
Yeah.
I admittedly had not heard of memo with three M's before you had plugged it.
Yeah, no, it's cameo, and I've been doing some extra content there and giving some, you know, some never before heard tidbits, not even on the podcast to some people. But no, I'm really proud of this one. So we just get it, you know, okay, because Mike has made multiple winner picks. It's not the first time he's done it. Obviously, this is, anyway, we'll see how I feel about it in the memo, but that's what we're going with for those who lack the context. And then I promise we will talk about the seriousness that was the merge week of the season. But this is so much more important. Play the memo. I'm excited for you to hear it.
Hi, Mike. Shannon Gus here with some words of comfort and encouragement, because from what I understand, someone's trying to get you fired from your podcasting job, which is so uncool, obviously, because apparently you have, you know, multiple winner picks, which I think honestly is so smart. Ingenious is the word that I would use, because you double your chances, right? So that's already times two right there. And then when you do things like, for example, you know, choosing winner picks based on things like who touches the idol first, and you get a couple of winner picks that way. That's just really smart, because, you know, that's fun because it's random. I think it's fun because it's meaningless. And what is order or rules or systems? Like, I think that's really overrated. And I think your way is fun because we just live in like a meaningless, gooey world where nothing makes sense and nothing matters. So I think your way is best and really, really smart and not at all cheating and not at all infuriating. So you keep doing what you're doing. You know, don't listen to the haters. Keep just undermining the very fabric of society. So, you know, for you, just to cheer you up, I've written a song about you and your very special winner pick for this season of Australian Survivor, and I hope you enjoy it. A little bit of Juicy in the sun. A little bit of Sam in a 2-for-1. A little bit of Marcus, you may as well. A little bit of Croc, Nina, and Mel. A little bit of Andy, he's long gone. A little bit of Sandra, Mish, and Khan. A little bit of Chrissy, Ben, and Shay. And why don't you just take all the J's?
Oh my God! All the awards! And it came with the song!
Of course.
Holy moly.
It has to come with the song. I want to say that I'll do anything for $20, even sell out all my values.
All right, just clip that out. Like, let's add this to her Twitter profile. I'll do anything for $20. Shane and Gus 2022. I mean, amazing. Now, look. I loved everything you brought here. I loved that the fact that it was not dripping with blood, water, or sarcasm or lava whatsoever. Yeah. There is one sticking point. I do believe that Mick did ask you to rate the choice to have two winner picks on the juiceometer from a scale of one.
So you're not going to give me 5 stars?
I mean, listen, there is one hanging Chad left here. You can address this on the podcast if you want to. On a scale of 1 to juice, how juicy would you say that was, that choice?
Very unjuicy. I'm not getting paid right now. Horrible choice. Terrible thing that you do. Think about what you did. Fire Mike Bloom. Hashtag it. Campaign is ongoing.
All right. Well, here's the thing as well. Because before this whole memo thing, I was about to come in and make an argument about, like, listen, I understand. Now, technically, I am an American coming on to an Australian Survivor podcast. Shannon, I hate to say it, I do have diplomatic immunity, which I believe exempts me from any sort of punishment or crime that I may have committed by making two winner picks.
I guess. It also means, though, that you won't make the merge and possibly through injury. So, and this is the merge. I don't know where we're going with this, but I'm really proud of my memo.
It was an incredible memo. Again, hire Shannon for her memo. I have firsthand experience. I could say that she is incredible. She puts a lot of work into this. In a day and age where maybe some people reveal that they do not put a lot of work into their cameos, don't be a Todd or Call, be a Shannon Gus.
Now, no,
put
that everyone on gets that one same song. That one song. Yeah. Heard that one song and everyone will get it. No, I will make personalized songs. I am singing on pretty much all the memos at this point. So...
And this is like unrequested. Again, I did not
people
say,
are requesting.
Please sing a Lou Bega parody for me, please.
Christian, I did a memo for Christian. He requested it. Sean and Megan, thank you so much for your memo request. And Mick Broom. So that is what's going on. We're also watching Australian Survivor, I hear.
Oh, we are.
Yeah, I hear that that's happening. So Mike, I don't know where to go from there. What are your thoughts on this season? Because I feel like coming out of last night, people were down on it. I'm not. Like, I feel like it's a mid-tier season that's fun and stable and like, there's intrigue. Last night was a little disappointing. Sunday night was, like, a jaw-dropping episode. Like, I genuinely don't remember another episode where my jaw spent that much time on the floor. Like, like, after the 60K and then the idol thing with Mark, and then it just never, like, really came up. So...
Yeah, I mean, no Roto-Rooter needed. No carpet cleaner, because you just did the work for you with that jaw on the carpet. Yeah, it's really interesting that there's so many coincidental times that I've come on, Shannon, because I've done... Week 5 a number of times, right?
I do that on purpose. All-Stars. Yeah, that's your slot.
And I've also Mambo number 5, so it just makes sense in so many ways. God, you're a brilliant songwriter. Mm-hmm. But
thought about
but the I feel like every time I come on here when it's not the finale, we sort of have to be like, oh man, there was one thing that we really didn't like. Right, in All-Stars, that was the pretty devastating week where Nick went, and then we had the whole turn with Lockie and Harry going out. And then in Brains versus
so
Braun.
So bleak of all stuff.
But then Brains versus Braun had, once again, like a really fun merge mode. And then the stupidity of the entire just hot mess that was that three-person
easily
community.
The worst week of that season. Yeah, oh my God, you're a curse.
The worst twist ever. Yeah. And then here we have a very good merge episode. Like, I will say, honestly, tantalizing, in my opinion. We will get into it. And a very unsatisfactory episode, maybe the worst episode of the season. So I do apologize, but I guess at the same time, am I that salve? You know, am I a bit of the milk to have after you eat the hot sauce to be like, all right, it's going to be fine. We're trying to, neutralize the pH here. I'm not entirely sure. As for the season proper, I think it's a solid season. I think stable, that you mentioned before, that you lumped in there with a bunch of adjectives, is a perfect way to describe it. And honestly, that makes me incredibly happy because you know, let's remember when we were talking at the end of Brains versus Braun last season, you, me, and Nick, we were so worried, mm-hmm. right? We were like, this was a season that was a lot of fun. It was a wild roller coaster, and it succeeded in spite of everything production is doing. I hate to say it, but this is the way Australian Survivor is going to be from now on. I cannot remember in a long, long time, Shannon, with a lot of reality TV that I have watched, how happily surprised I am with the decision that production has made with the twists this season. The twist! We will get into other things that I'm not so satisfied with in other, you know, specifications later on. But, I mean, I am just honestly flabbergasted that they looked at last season, that they did not say, well, the reason why all the chaos happened is because of all the stupid twists we throw in. Let's keep doing them and do them even more quintuply in this season. And instead, they let the players play, which is what we ultimately love on Survivor. And sometimes the way they play are not the ways that we'd like to play, as we'll talk about in this most recent episode. But honestly, please keep twists far, far away from what's going on. And even when they do bring in twists, as you mentioned on copious other podcasts, they're really interesting takes. I really enjoyed the mechanism of you can kidnap someone from the other tribe, but only if someone who receives votes. I think that's a really fun way to be able to see the hierarchy of the tribe and then be able to also limit your decision where it's not a Sean Hampson, well, let's just take the strongest person over. I just think the way that they incorporated a lot of cross-tribal mingling into the blood versus water setting, I really, really enjoyed. Now, that being said, it's not perfect. There are still some things they can work on. I think timing is an overall issue with Australian Survivor. Like, they create some really interesting twists, but then they throw other little mechanisms right after it that seems like there's no sense of, I don't know, rhythm to it. Like, for example, okay, we're going to have this big non-elimination vote where Sophie gets sent over to the other tribe. Mm. And then the next episode, we do a big summit where both the tribes come together.
Okay. I mean, that worked out. I mean, like, then we had, I thought you were going to say then we swap soon after it, which they've done worse before. They've literally, like, sent people to exile then to just come back at a swap, like, immediately. Yeah. I mean, the summit was entertaining. Like, I would disagree. I feel like, let's let her, you know, have her say with her tribe mates. Like, she, you know, was mad at them.
I don't know. I personally feel like I'd rather have that stew a bit more, you know, on her tribe.
Well, she might get voted out. Like, you might, like, you know, yeah. Like, there was a way that she would never get to meet them if it wasn't, like, you know, 12 hours later.
Or do an advent of something like you just did of, okay, you can kidnap someone from the other tribe. I'm actually surprised we didn't do that more in a Blood versus Water season. I was thinking they do something like out of Survivor China, where it's like, okay, kidnap someone from the other tribe, or they do more of what happened with Juicy Dave and Khan, where it's like, okay, one person from each tribe goes on a reward, sort of like what happened in season 29 with Exile. But even something like last week, where it's, okay, we're going to do the, and this is going into the merge, how they did an individual immunity challenge into like this double tribal council, fake double tribal council, fire making, whatever you want to call it, setting, and then went into the merge. I found really interesting and really disadvantageous for people like Shay and Khan, because it's like, hey, it's the merge. This is when we usually vote out people who are threatening. Who's threatening? Oh, how about the two people that just won a challenge that's going to resemble a good amount of post-merge challenges? I thought that was a really interesting choice that honestly I wasn't a big fan of, just because it did feel like a bit of a volley to set it up. But I guess if that's the purpose of it, then it didn't necessarily fail in that aspect. So again, I won't say that it is like, you know, a pristine, perfect way of running the season, but I am incredibly surprised with how smoothly it has gone so far. I will say with the cast overall, you know, we really enjoyed looking at their profiles in the preseason. And from what we've seen of them, I've really enjoyed them so far as well. I know that Nick came on here last week and complained, right, about like, what do we know about them? There are no big characters. Personally, I'm fine with that, especially after last season. Like, I do not want another season of the George and Emmett types just monopolizing the screen time, repeating the same sound bites over and over and over again. I know Australian Survivor is want to do that, but if it's coming out of someone like Sandra, who is maybe a bit more natural for that, then that's something I can tolerate a bit more, slash someone who does not, you know, last however many episodes, like someone like George did. So I'm into a bit more of the, now it's a bit more, but a bit more of the ensemble storytelling in this season, as opposed to last season, which I feel like really hyper-focused on the feast or famine aspect, particularly when it came to the post-merge. Again, there are exceptions. We're going to talk about the twins and what happened to poor Mel here at the end of the day. But I feel like this is going to be an odd comparison, but when I go back to the 1-2 punch that is Survivor Co. Wrong and Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, I really love both those seasons for very different reasons. Survivor Co. Wrong, I feel like, had a cast full of characters with a capital C, just like wackadoo personalities, people you would not run into on the street normally whatsoever, maybe not unless you run in specific neighborhoods or music festivals, and just out of this world people that truly, you know, stand out of reality TV stars. And then the next season, Millennials versus Gen X, certainly had some highlighted personalities, but I feel like in general, everyone was more grounded. They felt less like characters and more like people. Last season, I felt like was a big character season where it felt like, and purposely so, people were playing it up to the cameras, being over the top, being these big, brave, two-dimensional stereotypes. This time, from what we've seen, people have been more grounded. They've been more like people. And I am more than fine with the variation. Again, I do not necessarily need another season in a row of big, gigantic characters who will not shut the F up. I am fine seeing a little bit more apportioned screen time and getting to know these people that may not know the game as well, but they are playing hard. That's honestly all that matters for me. I'm a very simple person. So I know that that's a bit of an exception, a bit of a hot take, a lava hot take compared to some what others are feeling. But I'm really enjoying this cast. I think that they are all willing to make moves, as we saw from the very first freaking vote of the season. And I think they are here to play, despite what people are claiming as of late. Are their personalities a bit more downplayed than some of the other big characters in Survivor AU history? Absolutely. But considering how that is honestly a trope that I get tired of after 24 episodes, I am more than happy for a little bit more chicken and vegetables and less candy.
I mean, I think in terms of like the George of it all, it's not that they're like, we want more of an ensemble story. They don't have a character that is as good as George on the season. They did actually with Sandra, but and they would have, we've saw with her confessionals, they would have given it to Sandra. I think that it's, you know, maybe quite a consistent cast, especially with some of the people towards like the top end, it's quite even, and that's what makes for the ensemble storytelling. I think that they will give airtime to, as much airtime to, with no limit to a character that they think is above and beyond for someone like a George, for what became someone like a Haley as well. So I think that's a casting thing as well. And maybe that does make for more even storytelling, and maybe that is a virtue of a more consistent cast, even if you don't have as much of a standout as someone like George. But I think for me, it's not about, you know, personalizing them or the character of it all. They are personal, they are more down to earth, and yet we still don't know their stories. And that's what we spoke about last week with Nick, but to hear even more that, you know, we heard that Mel and Michelle, their father, passed away within the month. It was his birthday. We hear that that happened, I've seen on social media, with Geordie and Jesse, the stepmother who was completely a mother figure to them, passed away really recently, and it was her birthday. They still don't show that. I think those moments, that if we're saying that people are not characters, even more so should the story make sense. And especially for Australian Survivor, where pure story is what got Luke over $500,000, you know, hearing his story. I mean, that's how much people react to it. Like, that's how much it affects people to hear your story. Without story, then what character is Luke? So it surprises me that they've really cut down on the story element of it.
Now, I completely agree, but what I will counter with is that I think that has been a trend for a while.
Yeah, that's true. And I agree.
And I think there's been one exception. I mean, I know that you and Nick were talking about this, but I was also, last week I was kind of talking to my phone being like, can you name like three things about Haley, despite the fact that she's a, you know, a pain researcher?
Well, I'm like friends with Haley. From the TV, yeah, for sure.
And let me also put out there as well, like, I apologize if it comes across like I was like slamming in George in any way. Like, no, I think that he brought so much to this season and was really entertaining. But I will admit that I got incredibly tired of going back to him over and over and over and over and over and over.
George
will
tell you it wasn't enough.
I mean, listen, that's a very biased opinion, but just like, I mean, just like David the season before, it's too much of a
George
good thing.
And David are, yeah, like, honestly, like, two in a generation level characters. And the show will never hold back on that for the, you know, just to have some sort of evenness. It never, ever will.
Right. And but so what I'll tell people is, like, stop trying to look for the next one. You know, like,
don't
stop
cast
trying to
so well. Like, have people be pretty good, but across the board. Like, yeah. Because even if you have, like, a good cast, and then you have one person who's excellent, like, that will suck out the airtime. I think this is what casting should be. It should not have anyone brilliant, ever.
No, well, yeah, I think it's
or they should
a
get
matter
voted
of,
out.
I think everyone should have their strong moments. I think that's, in my opinion, that's the perfect season. Some of my favorite Survivor seasons are where I look back on every boot, and I'm like, okay, everyone had a moment, whether it was in the episode they were voted out, or, like, a personal moment or a strategic moment. I remember everyone from that season. Clearly, that's not an intention with Australian Survivor.
That will never, ever, ever happen with Australian Survivor. Like, we can talk about it with the edit, but, like, that is not, from what I understand, like, that's not how production view the show. Like, they see it as, like, a very different audience to the US. It's not even about, you know, we have more people, but we have more time, so it should kind of fit in evenly to the other franchises. They see it as competing against Married at First Sight, which is so hard, and then in July it might be The Block. Anyway, it's difficult. Like, we're always up against really difficult things. They want people to have eyes on screen. They don't want the audience to have to learn too many people. They don't want them to be bored by another character who's not as good. They are literally like, let me put the most entertaining spectacle in front of you at any given time. It is looking down on the audience because it's saying that they can't kind of rise to the occasion, be a bit more intelligent, be a bit more patient. But I don't know that they're wrong. Like, it's how it flows with the other Australian shows. Like, if you think about, like, The Bachelor, and, you know, I don't know, I don't really watch many other Australian shows, but it is true that you don't get to hear from everyone.
From my two examples.
No, but I've seen, you know, bits of Married at First Sight, I've seen bits of everything, and it is true that there are the stars, and then there are the people who are not stars. The problem with Survivor is that every person is going to be important at a point. They're all going to get the episode where they get voted out. All their votes are going to matter. Like, they make up what could be a key thing. Like, you know, and if they don't invest in that, then it kind of just loses. Like, in The Bachelor, people will just, you know, go in a group. Like, they don't ever need to be important. But, like, that doesn't really work for Survivor, but it is what Australian TV is. And that's why they're doing it.
And I think also it's tough because Survivor, especially the way that Jeff Probst has been talking about Survivor recently, right, has really been emphasized as a personal journey, a spectrum of individual growth. When we do not see, let alone the growth, but the individual, that makes things incredibly tough. But going back to what we were talking about before, I do think there is something that, ironically enough, was missing this season that was a key cog in character development in previous seasons. Because I looked back to Champions versus Contenders, where it seemed like everything changed. And maybe when you and I do, like, an oral history of Australian Survivor one day, we can talk more about this. But long story short, the ratings were not great for the first two seasons. So Channel 10 tries something different for Champions versus Contenders. They bring in more pseudo-celebs. They bring in a theme. You know, they bring in a different editing style, more big battle of the big boys type of stuff.
Yeah.
It does better in the ratings, and we have just gone even further into that moving forward. But one thing that started, actually, I think in season two, but has really utilized moving forward, is a reward where each person gets a comfort item from home, where they go around the fire, right? And they're like, oh, this is, I don't know, my kid's handprint from preschool. Oh, this is an ornament that I hang on the tree at my grandma's every Christmas. And it allows them to really open up, even if just for a second, about who they are. You know, going back to my Haley example, that's, I believe, how we found out that she was engaged, I think, or that she was going to be engaged. I forget her.
She was
going to
be engaged. Now she's engaged.
Right. But I believe that's when we found out about, you know, her own personal moment. The irony is, that is sort of personified in a person this season, right? That, like, oh, we don't need that moment from home because you're playing with that moment from home. But the irony of all ironies is that in removing that reward, the show sort of forgot to fill in other moments where they are interacting with that anthropomorphization of that reward of, oh my goodness, this is, you know, the anniversary of this is our dad's birthday after he just passed away, or Jordy and Jesse with their stepmom. Granted, if they had given their consent to allowing that emotional moment to air, I could understand if they didn't. But if they did, I would have loved to see that for many reasons, just because I think it develops them. It develops their bond as well, makes it even worse when we see these two twins torn apart at the end of this most recent episode. But instead, for whatever reason, that gets left on the cutting room floor. And that is, in my opinion, just leaving money on the table. That's leaving $60,000 in a briefcase with JLP. If you are depriving us of that content, whereas previously we had to get it through a tchotchke, here it's a person right there. You can give that to us. It's blood versus water, and we've got some interesting moments out of it, but it's disappointing to hear that there haven't been more, and there were more.
Especially for someone like Geordi, who's kind of like the villain and the larrikin, but like, give us the meaning behind it, and then people maybe, you know, care a little bit more. And as I've said, like, with Josh, I mean, Josh is like the most baffling edit of everyone, because I honestly feel like, firstly, he would come like into the season or into watching it thinking he was going to be like a main character. Like, he is a really pivotal person out there. He should be winner contender, but he's obviously not, which I've spoken about before. Brianna has more confessionals than him. Brianna has more confessionals than four people of 11 still in the game, including Josh. And he, and as we've said, he's expecting a child. Like, give us that. He doesn't seem so boring that like we can't hear a little bit more from him when he's like running the game. I'm confused about it.
And especially if Mel's vocalizing these things, right? Of like, oh, Josh is like so charming and he runs the numbers in his head. Like, okay.
He does do. It was a scene in the Merge episode where he's like, if Khan gets the twins and one of the other women, he can flip. And I was like, yep, that's right. I was like counting on my fingers. So like, I think Josh is really smart. I think that we just, you know, we don't get to see it. So we're going to talk about the edit. I wanted to say for production, it is truly shocking that if you were to tell me that the reason, like, we talk about like, maybe like a mid-tier season for me personally, the thing building it up and the thing that makes it like gives it all the high points is production. That is shocking to me. The twist, the way that it's been approached, the blood versus water theme, which I think at this point we can say is like, I don't know, maybe the best use of blood versus water that we've seen. Just like endlessly fascinating, just new permutations of those conflicts. That to me is the highlight of the season, which is crazy. You would have told me last year, that's what's good. Like, what? I really enjoyed that. I'm happy.
And so I do give kudos again to production for that perspective of, I would assume, looking at last season, or lightning struck twice and they just decided we're going to completely swing in the other direction this season. But perhaps looking at everything that happened and realizing, okay, let's try to work on something else, right? The dynamics already exist. And this is, it's just so much fun to see blood versus water between, you know, the interesting stuff that came from playing opposite your loved ones, everything that happened with Sandra and Nina, as an example, every time they faced off, to everything that happened post swap. I mean, listen, I also just got to say that Croc vote out episode might be one of my favorite AU episodes in a long time, if not ever. It was incredible. I mean, that scene where Chrissy and Jesse are sitting down and they like both are holding knives behind their backs, essentially, right? Where Chrissy knows the plan is to take out Jesse and Jesse knows that Chrissy knows the plan is to take out Jesse. And they're like both speaking past each other, but they're both emotionally regarding each other. It was almost something out of a scripted drama, in my opinion, where it was very complex. So again, the season has certainly had highs, and I really enjoy the stability of it. It makes me feel like the franchise is actually in a good place from that perspective. I do not feel like things are wrong in twists. Things are not wrong in casting. Things are wrong in the storytelling and in editing. And it's interesting that you speak about, you know, editing, for lack of a better term, to the lowest common denominator, because man, Shannon, it reminds me so much of Big Brother. So much a Big Brother. And there have been so many valid complaints from the community over these years, again, since that shift in 2018, of like, why are we getting such a simple story? Why are these people not popping up? Why do we get the same thing explained to us over and over and over again? And those, if you go on those BB streets, and good luck, bring your own weaponry, because they are rough out there. But if you ever watch the televised version of Big Brother versus the live feeds, we have the exact same complaints. Why isn't this dynamic shown? Why are they showing us like segments of someone slipping in a bathtub rather than like this really personal statement that somebody made on the live feeds? Why do they do a competition and then have us explain the competition after they reveal the rules of the competition? Why do they have to name the alliance every single episode and then do dramatic cuts to every single person they mention it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So like it's incredibly similar how two days are. And at the end of the day, the resolution is, and it sucks to say, these shows aren't made for us.
No.
And it sucks because in theory, like, we are the ones that are stoking the proverbial fires of the internet here, right? We are making the hashtag trending. You know, we are the ones that are able to keep the conversation going, laud players for their successes, for their failures, etc. But we are such a drop of water, if you will, in a larger pond of people that genuinely check out the show, watch it, are sort of half paying attention, enjoy it, but don't necessarily think too much about it, and then tune in back on Sunday for the next episode. And that's who they're making the show for at the end of the day. And it is incredibly frustrating because you can, you look at these other products and you say, you can do so much more. You have the time, you have the budget, you have the production. Look at these interstitials. They're beautiful. You can do so much better than what you're making right now. You know, you're like, hey, you have all these gourmet ingredients, and they're like, oh, I'm going to make corn dogs. And you're like, but no, you can make, you know, pate. You can make, I don't know, ribeye. No. Corn dogs is what it is, because these people like corn dogs right now.
Mm-hmm.
And for lack of, you know, for what it is, people enjoy corn dogs, and they're buying more corn dogs than they are ribeyes at the end of the day.
Yeah, I don't think that we can necessarily say that they're wrong about the casuals, and that is who they're making the show for. Like, I've long said that Australian Survivor talks down to its audience, Survivor South Africa talks up to its audience, and even superfans have complained that Survivor South Africa can be too complicated. It will really expect a lot of you. It will, like, swap the tribes around and hope that you remember these complex dynamics as they shift from tribe to tribe. Australian Survivor will be like, here is exactly like the most simplistic version of this dynamic. And let me tell it to you over and over and over in case we're making dinner, you know, before the last ad break. Yeah. So,
and or sometimes we will modify what it actually is to try to create a more straightforward narrative as to why somebody went home. And we won't even, if there's a vote that doesn't make sense in the group, we just won't explain what it is. You don't need to worry about it. Even if it's as pivotal as, you know, Michelle throwing out a vote for KJ and causing, you know, her to essentially get swapped over to the other tribe. We don't need to explain it because it doesn't necessarily need to happen.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you can complain about that, but they're, you know, what they're paid to do is to keep the show on the air, to keep the lights on against some very heavy competition. It's been rough out there in February. It's tough in the February slot. And that is what they're trying to do. And it's not for us. And that's, I think it's like they would rather make people think less so that they can just kind of enjoy it more, not feel like kind of overwhelmed by it so that they turn it off. But then the people who think about it a lot, like me and you, or people who are listening to this, I assume, 3-hour podcast about Australian Survivor, they would rather that we, in thinking about it, have way more gaps to fill in or way more incorrect stuff. And we're thinking about it so much, like, it doesn't align as much, because then other people who don't want to think about it as much have just less there that they kind of have to think about. So, yeah. Edit watch, in terms of that, as we've been saying, we'll talk about, I mean, Mel and Michelle, introductory package for them in episode 13. Was there no time before this? I mean, look, they don't want to introduce everyone in the first week. They don't want, you know, they don't want people to be overwhelmed. They don't want you to have to remember about the Mirror Twins when they come back together at the most. They want to tell you now. It kind of reminds me, I mean, it's so different, but like when Flick's mom passed away in the last season, it wasn't like, let us introduce that Flick has a mom who's ill.
Mom? Okay. Flick has a mom, just so everybody knows.
No. They didn't want to introduce that she, you know, had the story and then follow up on the story. They were like, it's relevant right now because she passed away today. And I think with Mel and Michelle, it was like they didn't want to have this connection and have you try and remember it because that's too much effort. So here it is right now. They have merch, and let us introduce you to Mel and Michelle, the Mirror Twins. And in the introductory package in episode 13 was so unfortunate that had to happen.
I completely agree. It is instant gratification, this method of storytelling. Foreshadowing, my goodness. One shadowing is maybe what Australian Survivor does. Of like, this person's going to be important. Sure, we'll introduce them. This is their moment to shine. You know, look at someone like Andrew, for instance, who like last season had nothing going on for a long time until the episode where he ended up winning immunity, I think was the first time that we really saw him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh yeah, okay, there's somebody on the show. They really want to emphasize that because, again, they feel like people can't necessarily keep track of it. People can, but again, that's not their intention at the moment. And this is not to like excuse them necessarily, because obviously, I think I'm speaking on behalf of Shannon and myself, this is not our preferred way of storytelling whatsoever. For lack of a better term, it sucks. It is uneven. It is unrealistic. And it really obfuscates, like you said, everyone has a role to play out there. And it essentially relegates people to not only supporting roles, but sometimes cameos. Mel and Michelle were essentially day players that came in to do extra.
Hey, Michelle's still there. She could win.
No, we'll talk about, we can talk more in Edit Watch. I think, you know, we can look at the merge episode to see if we can really nail down the group that's going to win. But I think it's an unfortunate way of doing things compared to at least what I am used to. I can still appreciate it. Again, the OTT aspects of it, love those prepackaged things as late as they may come with things like Mel and Michelle. Though I am surprised they talk about the Mirror Twins. I'm surprised they didn't focus more on their difference in personalities, though. Again,
it didn't necessarily come to be in the stories.
It sucks to have, you know, maybe we'll have it be brought up more next episode of the whole Michelle gloating over Mel, you know, not going as far as she did, sort of doing the I am evil Homer dance over her proverbial grave, as it were. But I thought that would have been a fun dynamic to bring up. But again, if for whatever reason, as simple as, well, you know, Mel doesn't really have any sort of involvement in anything going on, or even simpler as, well, the audience can't tell them apart, so how are we supposed to distinguish them as characters? In which case, hey guys, don't cast identical twins on Survivor, because then you're going to have a really tough time telling them apart, and you won't know what to do with them. That's your own trap that you ended up stepping in. So it sucks. Really sucks for Mel and Michelle. They had personal moments out there. They were characters in their own right. I mean, I guess welcome to the party, Mel, and also goodbye to the party, Mel. You essentially got kicked out of the party.
Grandpa Simpson, the whole...
Yeah, walking into the Maison Derriere, or the Melzon Derriere, to essentially get her first confessionals ever.
Confession
this
Mel.
Week.
Yeah, finally confession got to use Mel. That pun.
Oh, I love
Took
that. Oh,
five
you know
weeks,
what? We had Khan go out. I'm surprised he didn't make Mel a bechamel when she ended up going to Ponderosa.
I thought you were going to say that he had confessionals. She had no, confessionals. Anyway,
How about confessionals? Does that work?
Well, that's what they're doing in Jury Villa. I don't know. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know if it works.
Can we call it Ponderosa this season, by the way?
Ponderosa, that's great. I mean, it's Jury Villa. But
no,
yeah.
It's Ponderosa now. I'm rebranding it.
I love it. I'm so glad you're here for this. Yeah, unfortunate that, you know, that's what happened to Mel, getting confessional for the first time in episode 13, leaving in episode 14. I wanted to say underrated, Juicy Dave, 10 episodes with no confessional since the whole, you know, idol of it all. Jason said he's now grape Juicy Dave. I love that.
Oh,
I love
like
grape juice.
Slur.
That's my favorite juice. Fun fact about me.
Your favorite juice is grape juice.
Yeah. No, I will buy the like Shabbos grape juice, like Kedem, by the vat load. Mm-hmm. And it will be in my fridge, like proper liters of it. And it's pure sugar. I'll just drink it. Not even just on a Friday night. Every day.
It does feel one of the most... You sound like Buster Bluth, by the way. With like, we're going to get this party off the hook. Now we know how we celebrate in your house. Yeah. Interesting. I honestly have not thought about or drank grape juice since I was 6 years old.
Yeah, most
so
people. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, most
I do feel like
up.
Grape juice.
Yeah.
No, but you're Peter Pan, right? You're drinking up grape juice. You're, I don't know, eating. I was going to say Dunkaroos, but I feel like it's, I don't know, derogatory for Dunkaroos to exist in Australia. Do you know what Dunkaroos are?
Yeah.
It was a cookie made in America where it was like little kangaroo cookies.
I hate the way
that
Americans see Australians, you know, like Outback Steakhouse, Dunkaroos. Like, God, I've never seen a kangaroo. Well, I mean, actually, that's not true. Maybe we are.
It's so interesting because that's my involvement and my thoughts about Australia started with Dunkaroos and working at Outback Steakhouse. And then it has led myself to you, Shannon. So it's like a
and
weird
like, oh,
trail.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, now this is what they lied on the cookie box. They didn't tell me. But yeah, so all that being said, I thought Mel did bring some fire or lava, I guess, in the limited time that she brought. And it's weird. In the voting confessionals in the first episode, right? Because I don't think they got released for the Mel episode. In the con boot, KJ voted for Mel being like, well, we don't really have strategic conversations. You aren't really opening up. And so I can't really tell if it's okay, we didn't really edit her because she wasn't really giving us anything, or we didn't really edit her because she didn't pertain to the story whatsoever, or a mixture of both. You know, what role did she play? Indeed, I know that you got the chance to talk with her, but I wonder what role she did end up playing. I mean, hell, she was the split vote target / main vote target on several of the most recent votes. I gotta think you're doing or not doing something out there.
Well, look, I spoke to her this morning, really fun chat. She's really, really nice. I will say, I was like, how did this happen with the Khan going home? Like, it's not just that she's a split vote target, like she's on her own split. She's voting for Khan. If Khan plays out, like she's going home, like how did that happen? Michelle's on Shay and she's like, I really wanted Khan out since the beginning. I'm like, ugh, you needed Khan. We'll talk about it. But like, they really could have possibly done something. She's like, I didn't even tell Michelle that he was going because he would have, you know, Michelle votes for Shay. She would have told him to play his idol.
Play his
You know, and then she would have gone. But they could have done something as Josh vocalizes with, you know, one other person, Chrissy, who in those extended votes actually thinks it seems that Mel is going. And she's like, I think this is something's going on, but like maybe you're not going home. She like doesn't seem in the loop. It's like those four get together. We'll talk about it. But like that's the flip. The second episode, not the flip. The first episode this week, that's where the flip could be. Like when you have someone like Khan, who is this lightning rod, who has an idol, that's where like the bottom numbers you would think hopefully could come together with not a lot of people at all on the split, a split that was much, much better for people on the bottom and make something happen. So hard for Mel. Like she said to Jeriva, like, I only worked out today that they were coming for me. Mel, you got voted out. You've been voted out already. Like how? You've been a split vote target through the whole swap and to now. Today you worked it out. Like, I think there's a lot that falls in Mel's feet. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see it. Where, like, you know, she wants to play a passive game and that's, she's entitled to do it. But, like, wow, there could have been some opportunities there for the twins because they're also two numbers. They're the only pair that's not in this, like, strong six. I really feel we could have done something. So, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, that's the weird thing, right? Is that I think we want to err on the side of being kind, right? And really support Mel and Michelle and how much their story wasn't being told. And then you hear those types of things, right? It's almost akin to what happened with Gerald last season, who I believe ties Juicy Dave at the moment now for longest string of episodes confessionals.
No, because Mel was now that person.
Well, Mel was now that person. But I believe both
in between Juicy Dave, confessional. Yeah,
exactly. Like that sandwich is incredibly empty, just filled with air, no meat. But Gerald was someone, right, who we say, oh, this personality pops. What's going on? Why isn't he being shown? And then the more you sort of hear from him, you think, okay, yeah, you
I
don't
thought Gerald
necessarily.
Had stuff. What is this attack hit piece on Gerald? Gerald was fun. He had a calendar. He was doing stuff.
No, he had fun. He was fun, but I believe he was not necessarily someone who had was the gamiest.
He was throwing challenges. Gerald suffered for being with Emmett. That's that, like, I don't know how this is becoming about Gerald, but that's a big thing, is that like, when you have George, they're never going to take the confessional from Kara, because the casual at home doesn't want to hear from Kara, they want to hear from George four more times, or 80% of them probably do. Where same with Gerald, like, why will they give you one Gerald confessional, we can go to Emmett five times? You never want to, this is a big thing. If you're going to play Survivor, I know the people who go out to play listen to this, and I'm speaking to them through the screen. If you're going to go out and play, do not align with someone who's more charismatic than you. They will purple you. Look, there was a Jared AK thing. Don't do it. Find someone boring. You team up with them. That's my advice.
Yeah, it's like, hey, talk me through how you do your taxes. And if they last longer than 10 seconds, great. You're my number one. You're my ride or die.
that's what you want to do.
What's your favorite John Grisham novel? Oh, you have multiple ones? Fantastic. Final two right
exactly.
Now. We're making a deal.
Look, last thing on Edit Watch before we get into the drama of the week, but I wanted to say, like, because I know people who work for the show, and I feel like I'm guilty of this, so I just wanted to put it out there, which is, like, it's not on the editors, and I feel like it's becoming personalized, and I feel like I want to say it because I feel I could be a part of that, too. It's not the editors, it's the edit. You know, on puzzles, it's not, like, necessarily challenge people. It's, like, it's you know, not the individual team. It's not the social media team or the promo team. It is literally the approach of the powers that be for this vision that they have for the show. Everything we've spoken about how they're trying to commercialize it, about how they're trying to get the ratings up. And I'm guilty of it too. It's not about the editors. The editors didn't decide, oh, we'll never show Mel or Michelle. The editors were given a story by production that they have to have play out. So I just wanted to put that out there because I feel bad that I feel like I've been personalizing it. And that is not what it is.
Hold on. First, I have to pause that puzzle. Is that we're on an Australian Survivor podcast. I've never heard that word said on this before. But yeah, I could not agree more. I had the pleasure of being able to write a piece in Cinemontage magazine back in February 2020, where I got the opportunity to interview a lot of editors that have worked on Survivor for decades. And the process is some people might just assume, okay, they hand the episode off to an editor who does whatever the flip they want to do with it, and then they just send it off and they say, okay, it's ready to publish. That is not the case whatsoever. Everything, every single thing that happens on the show before, during, and after it is produced is through the filters of production, through the producers. They are the story editors, in a manner of speaking. They are the ones that guide the narrative. They're the ones that guide the editors to make certain choices as well. So I completely agree. I'm guilty of it as well. The umbrella term of being like, ah, stupid editors, why did you not show this? When really the blame does fall on production from mm-hmm. that perspective. That at the end of the day, there are people that are giving the orders behind, you know, these chairs, telling the editors, okay, clip this out. We don't need the clip of Mel and Michelle, you know, celebrating their dad's passing.
Yeah.
Let's instead get, you know, some more coverage of, we need more stuff of Chrissy not being able to figure out how to stoke a fire, even though I love Chrissy. Or, hey, let's have, you know, Jordy cackle some more about the fact that he's going to vote out Sandra. It's a direction provided, not a direction that I agree with, but ultimately the things that you love, both good and bad about the show, are going to fall onto those shoulders. And I think it is a bit incorrect for us to improperly slander a team of people who are honestly just doing their jobs, just at the direction of someone who we are not necessarily agreeing with.
Exactly.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Let's talk about Sam and Mark. Let's get into it. Let's get into this first vote, this merge vote, because this was a lot and it's so personal and it's hard because when you are analyzing Survivor, like what you try to do and what I've tried to improve upon, especially like through 4 years of podcasting, is like you don't want to be personal. Like it's a game. You're analyzing them as characters, as players, but then it's blood versus water and it's inherently super personal, like it's their marriage, as Adam Klein. The whole week in my mind, I just had Adam Klein.
Marriage?
Yeah.
Do we have a ship name for Sam and Mark, by the way? Is there a portmanteau? Smark?
Oh, that's terrible.
Well, other one's ma'am.
Ma'am. That's what it is. Ma'am. I have some complaints. Like, that might be right. That might be right. It's their marriage. And I feel like I want to get the nuance out there just as a qualifier. The first thing being, I think Mark did the wrong thing. I'll put that out there. I think he did the wrong thing in this situation, but I think
which one? Because there are multiple
in this whole episode. In this whole episode,
Mark
he was in the wrong.
Mark is house crashing on dog houses this entire week on Survivor AU. He's got a lot to speak up for, man.
I know the way that it escalated from like the fake jokey doghouse about the swap, which was totally fine, to like the idol thing, to like the decision. It was like, this has really escalated quickly. I think he was in the wrong at the merge. I think that Sam was dismissed. I want to just say from the go, and I'm sure that it's not been an easy few days for Mark, I don't think that speaks to who he is as a husband, as a partner, as a person. I think that good people and good spouses and good partners can do the wrong thing. I think none of us are a perfect person or a perfect spouse. And I think that having your worst relationship moments with someone you're so comfortable being yourself with, aired on TV, is flat out a nightmare. So I don't want to extrapolate it beyond this moment and just say like it was the wrong thing, but that doesn't speak to like their broader relationship, and it would be really, really foolish of me to try to do that. I also don't want to negate what this moment was to people. And I had women reaching out, I had women in my mentions. I will say that it was upsetting for me to watch, because I do believe Sam's agency was taken away. It's something we can debate, it's something that has been debated. I've been in a situation in a past relationship where I had no agency at all for years. So it's something that I've buried because I haven't felt that way in a very long time, but it's something that triggers me to a bit. It's something that I'm sensitive to. And in watching it and in watching what I felt was someone's agency being taken, I thought, oh, I hate feeling like that. And I hope I never feel that way again. And it was upsetting to me. So I can personalize it. Again, that's not about Sam and Mark. That's about this one incident that I personalize and extrapolate for myself and my history. And I don't want to undermine how I felt about it or how anyone felt about it and being upset. So I think those two things can exist at the same time. I think there's nuance there that I'm really trying to put out, which is that you don't have to extrapolate it further for Sam and Mark, and you shouldn't, but also you can read into it for yourself and you can be upset by it, and people are entitled to those feelings.
Why not both? I completely agree. Hey gang, let's not make assumptions or declarations about people's relationships based on what we see about them on a reality television
in like
show.
The most stressful situation in Blood versus Water, which is so messy, which is so complex, which is like with great power comes great responsibility, for the fact that they're both such power players who came into this massive conflict where they had too much power, each of them. Like, Mark split them up to make connections to her power. Like, they came back with too much. Like, it didn't yep. fit in. It wasn't compatible. And most, you know, people haven't been in that situation with their loved one, with their partner. Super, super stressful. Don't wish it on anyone. Hard to have a relationship fight and a really low moment in your relationship aired on TV. And I don't think we should extrapolate it further than that. But I still think that we can talk about that moment and say what we thought was wrong about that moment. I feel very strongly about that.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like we can also say at the same time that I think Mark was being a jerk and that he was talking over
jerk, but isn't a jerk. That's the language.
That's the distinction. That's the distinction. Yeah, and that he was talking over Sam. And I think as well, I think Sam came from an incredibly valid place. I mean, we'll talk about the strategic merit behind the decision of Khan versus Shay. But I mean, listen, I'm talking out of my butt a bit, but I can imagine that Sam has found herself multiple times in her life in not exactly this situation, but something that if you replace the variables has the same feelings behind it, right? Where you are in a room with a male colleague or many other male colleagues, you vocalize your opinion, you are either talked over, ignored, or both, and essentially kind of browbeaten into going along with them, even if it's a decision you don't agree with, even if it's a decision that might hurt you, your connections, your success, etc. I know the story of many women who have had to deal with that over their professional careers. I can only imagine Sam feels the same way. And that's why I think the personal projection is unfortunately understandable. You know, a lot of people were fired up against Mark, and then during the next episode against Sam and Mark due to what happened or did not happen in episode 14. Understandably so. But I think, like you said, the important distinction we need to make is that we draw the line at like how this personally pertains to you. And don't go so far as to then make base judgments about people as characters based on them being characters on television, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. This is the way they're being personified. And as we just mentioned, an incredibly filtered edit, you know, as streamlined as a Play-Doh spaghetti factory. And we cannot necessarily make comments about who they are as a person, good or bad, just due to how manufactured both the circumstances and the narrative is. As well, Mark made a hell of a lot of mistakes and bad judgment calls in that first episode when it particularly came to Sam, and I felt for her very much so, especially, you know, in their domestic, I guess, as Khan would very sadly and funnily call it, and into the beginning of the second episode. But I do not think that should give us any pause to say, okay, now what does this mean about their life at home? I think that, you know, they have an incredibly happy life, an incredibly successful life. Some of the most successful couples out there are those who do disagree, who don't see eye to eye on things. This is just an example of that for me, where I do think Mark did not exhibit bad behavior, but that does not make him a bad person.
Like, I mean, the agency thing for me, like, as I said, hits deep for me. Like, the agency thing is something I'm always looking at in relationships, because in my adolescence, like, that was something that I so much didn't have. And it's something I really need. It's something that shapes me, I think. I think it's why I'm such a control freak, just to pop psychology this, because I had no control. So when I see someone who has no agency in the situation, again, that's a personal thing about how much it hits me, but it really hurts. And I don't know how it's a debate about whether Sam had agency. I mean, she comes back the next episode, she's talking about how she didn't have agency. But even beyond that, I mean, I will say to Sam's credit, she said on social media that she had a choice. And, you know, obviously she needs to defend Mark, and she's, you know, entitled to feel that way about her choice. From my analyzing from the couch, I don't see how this is a choice. Like, I think when you give someone two terrible choices, one of them being vote out one of your closest relationships in the game, that is a key thing that you've been working on through the whole swap, that is someone who gave an immunity necklace to you, that's one choice. The other choice is tip him off about the idol, or try and kind of come up with some other plan with some other numbers and the idol to sink your husband's game and in it your game and his whole alliance's game, and also be duplicitous against your husband, like just tipping off of the idol. So you're coming back and Mark's like, did you do it? And you're like, nope. Like, I know Mark did it with the idol recently, but that's really hard.
I was going to say, that's turnabout is fair play. I mean, you can vary. Yeah.
But don't do that. Like, we'll take umbrage with that. Like, I don't see how that's possible. And I think everyone, even we'll talk about it with the next episode. Why didn't Sam flip with the girls? Because she and Mark are a unit. They're a team. Yeah. Should he have compromised? Yes, we will talk about it. But I don't see any other pathway in either of these votes for Sam that isn't with Mark. And it's really unfortunate that she's not getting her way in that. But I see her only option as convincing Mark to what she wants. And it's again, it sucks if that's not happening. But there's no, I'm voting against Mark. I'm voting against his alliance. I'm putting him in a bad position. Like, they do share the prize money. They are a unit. They are a team. They are a partnership. So I don't see, I don't, it's like a non-starter for me. Like, it was like pretty much not even worth being in my notes. Like, should she tip off Khan? That's not an option for me. And when you don't have an option, I don't see it as a choice. Like, when you have to go with this because it's your husband, I don't see that as a choice. And I don't see that as agency.
So there's a lot to talk about in this vote. Cause I don't necessarily agree with your statement about tipping Khan off about the idol. Cause we could talk about what the sort of the merits that might exist within that, or I don't know. We'll talk about the weirdness of that split in general. But I think also what we're seeing here is one of the downsides of Blood versus Water. I talked in the preseason podcast about how I always really enjoyed Blood versus Water in the preseason, especially when, again, you have loved ones on separate tribes and how that influences them emotionally, not only with playing against one another, but what happens when you vote out someone else's loved one, you know, how does that affect them, especially if they're allies or enemies with somebody on the other side. The post-merge of Blood versus Water is where things get a little more solidified. We go from a liquid to a solid a bit, where incredibly, very, very, very rarely, which is, again, why I love episode 11 so much, is because it really is one of the first time I can think of where a pair of loved ones actually diverged and voted along separate interests. And I think that's plainly only because Chrissy has not watched the show and, like, does not have that headspace to necessarily think about, okay, I should probably, you know, vote along with Croc's plan, as cockamamie as it may be. But the vast, vast, vast majority of the time, you're just going to have pairs voting together or voting along with the same plan and maybe splitting votes. Because like you said, why would they not? They know each other from outside the game. Some of them live together. They are not going to break that bond. This is something that reaches outside of the game. And while it can provide some beautiful psychology and, you know, emotional dramatic moments, I mean, I loved everything Mark and Sam, everything Smark in
Ma'am.
That merge episode. Ma'am, please.
Yeah,
just
please.
I mean, it was beautiful to watch. It's odd to say because it's like sort of an ugly beauty, again, based on sort of what you project into it. But to have this scene where these two people who are married come together and say, okay, we're going to do this. And Sam says, nope, we're going to do this. I mean, it's one of these once in a, I've never seen that before in a Survivor season. And this is a show that's been on for 20 years. And again, it wasn't manufactured by any sort of twists or anything that would produce a once in a generation moment on Survivor. This is something that just came from the fact that these two had their strategy and it was foolproof on paper of, okay, you go your separate ways, you collect your cards, and then you come back together. And then you realize there's only so much room for so many cards at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, now we have to pick what we're going to keep. And I thought the conversation between them was tense. It was emotional. I thought it was really wild to see. I know that we had the John and Jacqueline 5-hour montage fight in San Juan del Sur, but I can really not think of another moment that exemplifies Blood versus Water and the difficulties therein as much as that scene. And as frustrated as people might be of, like you said, Sam's quote unquote lack of agency or independence or what have you, that is not what Blood versus Water is in the post-merge. And it sucks, but it just comes with the territory of when you're playing with, aka alongside your loved one, 99.9% of the time, you're going to vote in their interests, even if it might be against yours.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like just imagine you're there with your partner, or if you don't have a partner, some other like extreme person in life, loved one.
Your favorite celebrity.
In which universe is Sam not voting with Mark? It's just not going to happen. And I think it's unfair to put it on her. I think this is just like so reasonable and self-explanatory that she would go with Mark. So then the issue becomes, well, Mark's not listening to her, and that's hard because she doesn't have the other option if she wants to be a unit with Mark, which I'm saying is very fair. And we see kind of these paths that are diverging where Mark is throwing out Khan from the challenge. Khan told me in an exit that he kind of felt like even through kind of that swap, the boys were all talking about it when we get to merge, we're going to vote out Khan, which I feel like, how are you having those conversations when you haven't come back together with Sam. Like, you don't know what she's doing. You've separated
what,
you guys.
What happened to the cuddling? Didn't we see this cute little moment?
Mark has been coming for Khan for weeks at this point, like, from the beginning. But at the end of the day, he's also watching Khan give a necklace to Sam. Like, I don't understand how someone who is in a pair here, I think that in itself is dismissive, to, like, be so strong on what the merge vote is going to be when, like, Sam's going to come in with her own stuff. That if that's happening pre-merge and certainly from the challenge, like, that's an issue. But Sam is throwing out Shay's name and is like, I just need to make sure I'm on the same page with Mark, which, spoiler alert, she just absolutely was not. And the reason I didn't have an issue with Sam doing it is because for Sam, that vote makes sense for everyone. They are so lucky that they have Shay as such an ideal compromise from a marriage perspective. From their relationship perspective, Shay is someone who Sam is not close to, doesn't know, and Mark and the boys wanted to vote Shay out last episode before that, but she won immunity. So she is a threat. She is a target. Let's see how the numbers are going to kind of shake out. Let's see where this is going to go, but keep an asset in Khan, who is a threat. And we can talk about Shay versus Khan from a pure game perspective beyond the relationship, but from a pure relationship perspective, and we're talking about compromise, this is the compromise. If Sam is saying, let's vote out Josh at that first vote, let's vote out Jordan, then I understand. Now we're between a rock and a hard place. You know, she wants one of his boys. He wants Khan. There is no resolution to that. But the resolution to this is that she's saying Shay. And Shay is the ideal compromise. And that's why it upset me that Mark wouldn't allow that or was pushing so hard on Khan. And was actually the person, it seemed, driving the Khan vote the hardest. It wasn't like everyone went along with it and there was nothing he could do. And he didn't want to push too hard against his alliance and show where his loyalties really lied. He was pushing Khan when Shay was right there when Sam had made that connection with Khan. And there was so much merit. There was so much merit to it being Shay and to that being the compromise. Yeah.
That's the thing that really confuses me. And I do think it comes down to the storytelling. I'm a little surprised that Khan said that the boys were teeing up coming for him. I guess, I don't know, did they not want to blow the big merge boot surprise by revealing that the guys had been gunning for him? But I was really shocked that Mark's like, okay, Khan's got to go now for many reasons. I mean, we can certainly talk about as we look back on Khan, like, okay, now you decide to do this when you have done how many unsuccessful vote splits on him to get him to play the idol. Now this is who you lay with. This is why you decide to do it. But I could not agree with you more. As recent as the day before, these guys were like, yeah, Shay's got to go. And now they're like, I think Khan. It should be Khan this time. And then the next day, Shay's got to go this time. What changed? What on earth?
Well, Khan, they feel, is a bigger threat than Shay. And Khan's not there in that swap tribe on Bloodia. So they're just like, Shay's a fine target, but Khan is a better target. But Khan's not a better target for Mark when he's a key ally of Sam. Like, I think it just, it dismissed the whole relationship between Khan and Sam. And then when the next episode, when you see Mark say, Sam has fallen under Khan's spell, that's really dismissive. And that's also a bad read. Like, Mark is wrong about that. I believe to this day, I think in exits, Khan was saying, we see it, it's true loyalty that Sam is correctly reading from Khan. He is a threat, but he was an asset to them. He was a true and loyal asset to them, just being Sam and Mark, especially Sam, kind of like in that boys' alliance. And the reason that Mark is saying, oh, well, we should get rid of Khan, is because he doesn't see that true connection. He doesn't see it as valid. He's dismissing his wife, saying this is a real thing and saying, I know better. I've never seen you interact. I'm here at the merge. I've never seen you interact, but I'm pretty sure you're being swindled by him. And Sam's not being swindled by anyone. That's what's frustrating, is that Sam is running the show. So for Mark to come in and say that she's under his spell, no, everyone's under Sam's spell. It's really frustrating to me, as you can hear, that Mark would think that of Sam. It is really underestimating the game that she has played to this point.
Just check the chizzy charts, Mark.
Is he not seeing the chizzy charts?
And you know why this read came is because he made this decision at the swap.
Yeah, well, no, he made it ever since he realized Khan means king in Arabic, and then it was done, and then it was over forever.
I feel like Mark just got like. Mark found a dictionary out there in the bush and was like, oh my God, I missed my Kaiser Soze, my Kanzer Soze moment. Yeah,
I mean, like, the thing is that Khan is charismatic. Like, I understand how he can do that to people, but he wasn't doing that to Sam. So I think that was a big break in that compromise.
I think you can say that, but I think it could also very easily be two-sided of Sam is also misting Khan as well. Could that not also be true that Sam is incredibly charming? There's a reason why she became such a swing vote at OG Blood back in the day. There's a reason why she made such a quick bond with Khan at Wetter. that there has to be clearly, you know, there might be a two-way street going on. I agree. Again, Mark is not a bad person, but I think these were very bad judgment calls and assumption to make, especially about your own wife. Like, it just felt dismissive of her own skills in a manner of speaking of like, oh, you don't know any better. You've just fallen under Khan's spell. And maybe it's a combination to me of him maybe building up Khan is too big of a threat.
We can certainly talk about that. He was laser focused on Khan. Like, that, I think, is the issue.
That really is the issue.
For,
is
like,
that,
like, weeks.
And that's the thing, is that I do feel like, again, with that swap, that with that choice, he has now had so many votes away from Khan, right? And remember that OG Water did not vote, you know, after day five, after that Brianna vote that got as many confessionals as Josh, that Alex quit and Mark was one of the people to beg him not to essentially have that plan to get out Sophie and, you know, flush Khan's idol. Mark, I think, has just been waiting to do this for days and days and days and days and days that I wouldn't imagine there was nothing else he could be thinking about. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would not be surprised if he wanted to target Shay potentially because he thought she was close to Khan, that he was just so Khan-centric that everything else fell around him, unfortunately, including the one person who is closest to him saying in his ear, like, it's fine, I have this handled. I do really like the point that I think she made in the first episode about how, yeah, I mean, Khan is a weapon, but we can also wield a weapon. Mm-hmm. This is not like a mechanical chainsaw that's just running on its own, Maximum Overdrive style. Like, if we get a handle on it, we can absolutely utilize it to our benefit. But I just think Mark had such a perception of Khan that he could not let it go, that he decides to make this choice here and then does kind of like strong arm. Now, for all we know, like we said, this could have been a decision by committee as these guys keep pushing forward. But
he really felt like a big part of it.
From the story we were told, it was Mark saying, I want to get rid of Khan. And so we do have to kind of give him the credit and the fault to that, along with also, you know, telling Sam essentially, for lack of a better term, hey, I'm glad I got at my allies and you got yours, but my allies are better than yours are.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't a Mark thing and if it was a committee thing and he's like, there's nothing I could do, then I feel like Sam could reasonably tip Khan off. And that, like, Mark's also kind of in on that. And like, he could read it. It's right after the merge. Like, who knows? And in saying that, then why is Shay not the beta? Shay's not even the beta on the split. Like, to the point where there was no compromise, it's like, then it should be, okay, we'll make Shay the beta. Sam, I'm not looking if you want to kind of wink at Khan, because I had no say in this from the committee. Mark actively wants Khan out. That's why she can't tip Khan off. And how is Shay not the secondary split option? There's no compromise. Like, it's not even a game thing. It's from a marriage perspective. Like, marriage? Compromise.
Yeah. Can't. I mean, could it be a thing of what we had spoken about before with why, you know, the guys might have wanted to target Shay of no loose ends? Well, we voted Mel out. She's going to be ticked off at us. Let's, like, if she does end up,
Shay knew where she was sitting.
That's the thing, is I think maybe they underestimated that. I think they didn't necessarily realize. I mean, remember that kind of cringy scene last week, right? When Shay's, oh, the plan is to split between KJ and Mel. Oh, when did you determine that? Oh, well, when we purposely excluded you from our group. Like, I truly.
Yeah, I mean, they also didn't bring Ben over. Like, as much as Shay hasn't been voted out, she's like just as close to have been basically denounced by the group.
Yeah, this is not the Dr. Shaw. I'm like, okay, but if they don't vote with me one more time, then I'm pretty sure something's happening. I think, and this is something that I think is also kind of ticking off the viewers, understandably so, is that I do think this strong six, as it were, is being, particularly the guys, are just being a bit dismissive of the people around them. Though, I mean, also, talking out of the other side of my mouth here, do we give credit to Shay? I mean, we see her, though admittedly in these two episodes, she has said, like, it seems like she isn't doing nearly enough strat chat or one-on-one conversations as somebody like Sam. It seems like she has a very important connection in the form of Jordan. Jordan is probably, if Josh is the head of this alliance, apparently, even though he declares that he's not, right, that it's a democracy in a manner of speaking, Jordan is probably his number one guy, just in the form of blood, as it were. And so if Shay does indeed have the ears of the sort of vice president of Boys R Us, that, oh, that's actually an incredible name for this alliance that I stumbled into. I guess it's good that she, even though she's not making a lot of connections, she's making a really good one. What do you think? How much should we apportion credit to Shay for making a key relationship to sort of make sure that the boys, at least for that round, don't want to go after her?
Not a lot of credit, because I feel that she would have been gone if she didn't win immunity. For me, and we can talk about it through from a game perspective, Khan versus Shay, I just think that she wins out because she's not as big a threat as Khan. Like, they're both physical. I think Shay is more physical, but they both have that opportunity to win immunities. Khan has the idol, which I think is the big thing, and Khan just has kind of that, like, sparkly charisma that he could win at the end, just, like, make those connections. They just seem as a bigger social threat. Like, that's all that I put it down to. And I think that there's merit to that. So if it was just Mark, and Mark and Sam weren't, like, a team, I could definitely see that for him. I think that Khan is a really dangerous player. I just think that he's also an asset. And I think when you're a pair that's, like, really, really central, and you have an idol, and you're, like, in this really, really strong position, and at a point, the boys are going to break, like, he could be that asset for you. And even if he's an asset for the minority, like, it'll never be against you as a pair. It would be against one of the other pairs. So I think that you're safe enough to really work with that almost more dangerous asset. And there's the fact that it is that key connection for Sam. So I think even from a game perspective, I think it's probably like a 50-50 call on like working with the more dangerous player in Khan, but kind of having that asset. And then, you know, even if he's a bigger threat, even if you want to take him out because that's true, I still think the disparity of that was not worth how it made Sam feel. So I think from a game perspective and then beyond it, Shay becomes the obvious vote.
That's the thing for me, is I think I'm just confused and I'm missing as to why Mark felt like Khan was going to come for him. And we see this happen a bit, I believe, I forget in which episode it is, where he tries to make this point, right, of, oh, he's going to come for you eventually, he's going to get rid of you. And Sam's like, no, he won't. It's, again, I think this just very big assumption from whatever perception Mark has of Khan, that Khan is Khanzilla, in a manner of speaking, that, though I guess that was Croc, right, because that was Godzilla versus King Kong, which made JLP just like absolutely froth at the mouth. But this idea of he's this big bad guy that's going to stab us all in the back and smile and cook his way to $500,000. When it really, at least again, you can disagree with me if Khan says something different in his exit interview, but it didn't seem like at that time Khan really had a problem with Mark whatsoever. Mm-hmm. In fact, he was in really tight with Sam, who obviously is married to Mark, so by proxy, he would kind of have to be at least okay with Mark. I could understand if Mark would want to target somebody like Khan personally if he felt like he was coming for him. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense. But from what we saw, I did not see any sort of individual reason why he felt, okay, let's go ahead with this. And that's weird to sort of manage in a game that had just turned individual.
I think for the committee, you want to take out Khan. Like, for the committee at large, without, again, putting Sam into that, because we'll talk about the next vote, but it became difficult for the people on the bottom to pull anything off, and it became blatantly obvious that there was this, like, strong majority picking people off and that they don't want to crack, apparently, even though they look like they're about to crack. If you have Khan, and if he has an idol, and he is the type of person who keeps not using the idol, so you can't even just, like, flush the idol and have him be, like, a less threatening ally there. Like, he's going to be there with the idol. If Khan is there, maybe they can make something work, because he is the kind of person who might galvanize the minority, because he does have the tool and the idol to do that. I think that is really dangerous for the committee. So I definitely see Khan being the option there. Maybe that's not so much a Mark thing, because, again, I don't think it would be against Sam and Mark. But I think from the committee perspective, I understand that. I just think that from the swap, like, so many things about this, like the fact that Mark says, don't try burn relationships that I spent ages building, when literally he wants to get rid of, like, one of Sam's closest connections. The fact that he did send them away at the swap to come back and consolidate their numbers, but then it's like, well, I don't like that specific number. There was a lot of what it felt like was hypocrisy in this.
Or at least, I don't know, like a sense of hierarchy, which I know is a big word, right? The judge is like, oh, no, there's no hierarchy. But that's what it very much felt like, was, as I mentioned before, him sort of coming forward and being like, well, it's so great that you made your little friends, but at the end of the day, like, this is what's going to carry us forward.
That's what I actually find really fascinating, because there should be no natural hierarchy in a romantic partnership, right? Like, that's what I find so interesting about these different dynamics in Blood versus Water. Like, we see Jesse naturally tending to Geordi, and we don't see any issue with that. Like, Geordi's the older brother, it makes sense. We might see a hierarchy in terms of, like, respect from a parental relationship, but then also, again, we've seen, like, you know, giving down to the child and the hierarchy of, like, whose needs come first in that relationship. But it's really dangerous when you get into a hierarchy of a partnership that should be equal, and it's so difficult to kind of make sure that it is equal, but it's also imperative, especially in a game like that, that they would both kind of have that voice. And I think as well, women can feel like they kind of carry that emotional burden and emotional weight of kind of having to give those compromises that might make them give up power, that might make that hierarchy disparity become clearer. So I thought that was absolutely fascinating, because I don't think we'd see it with anything other than necessarily a romantic relationship. If it was, as we saw, Croc and Chrissy, there's enough separation there that maybe they just do their own thing. Maybe that is when you tip off Khan. If it's the cousins, maybe so. If it's an older sibling dynamic, I think it speaks for itself, a parental relationship, as we're talking about. But I think in this situation, with it being so close and also what should be so even, that's why it became disappointing, because it didn't have a natural hierarchy to tend to, you would hope. And then it was also too close to ever part from. And I've said in the past that I felt like Sam wore the pants in the relationship, Mark wears the jacket. I think I was pretty clearly wrong about that. He says they're both stubborn. This is clearly two clashes of blood who want to stick to their plan, and Sam is the one who has to kowtow to that. And she comes into the merge with fewer numbers just from the swap. So from a game perspective, like, he is in the majority, and from a game perspective, she has less power. So the fact that then she has to give up even more power, to the point where, like, right at the beginning of the merge, it's going to be a lot for her to, like, reclaim it back, which is so unfortunate. The fact that she has to give up more power in that, when she already kind of comes in on the back foot, that as well kind of just showed that hierarchy shifting even more.
Yeah, I think that Mark also made a blunt but very interesting point when he flat out asked Sam, if you get to the end with him, meaning Khan, do you honestly think you could win? And maybe that's another determination as to why he ends up targeting somebody like Khan, right, and decides to side with the boys, is this idea of, well, I think the two of us taking on this sort of, like, group of dudes, it's probably, you know, they have much less win equity than somebody like Khan, who I am convinced is apparently a wizard, and, you know, but also God and Jesus Christ. He's essentially the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, all contained in one beautiful man. And so we need to crucify him, in a manner of speaking. But it's an interesting point, because I do think, I mean, I guess we saw that Khan was somebody who had a lot of pull, or at least was someone who was incredibly interesting. And well, it seems like in that next episode that now we have someone pointing at Josh being like, well, Josh is the one that's going to win. Maybe the other guys are not necessarily there, which again, maybe speaks to the perception that Jordy and Jesse are doing and the underestimation of it. I just thought, again, it was not a great look from Mark, particularly in that moment. I thought that was a very sort of curt way of asking that question. But another reason to sort of add on to why Mark wanted to side with Boys R Us over Sam's connection with Khan in this moment is because I could imagine him stewing in Bloodier, being like, I've got this perfect plan. I'm going to bring Sam into this. We're going to have our six, and then we, like, make our moves. You know, maybe we go in with Jordy and Jesse, have a double date at the final four, and then we can sort of beast out. To your point about the dynamics of the two, I think it could also change as well. I think you talk about wearing the pants and the jacket. I think that was true back in season two. And I don't know if that was a reflection of the fact that, I don't know, maybe Mark didn't watch as much Survivor and Sam did and thought she knew what she was doing, or just
she came out hotter as well. Yeah.
Yeah. She was more of a vocal leader, and Mark was somebody that was more so looking to, like, I mean, he made it as part of his strategy, right? To be like, I don't want to be the leader. Let me sit back. But I think that time emboldens us a lot. And I think that the time that Mark and Sam have spent, I could certainly imagine the confidence that grew and the confidence in a manner of speaking. And I think that I could very easily see a world where Mark comes into the merge being like, I have essentially written out how you and I win this game. Why are you trying to rewrite this story? And again, it's not a good place to come from. But given apparently, you know, what he has sort of been bubbling, he put something on the stove for a while. That pot has overboiled and then some by the time, you know, days and days have passed.
Yeah, I mean, I said this on Talking Tribal, like, any other ally would be long gone. Like, I was talking about this with Jason, he was like, if they were, like, two pre-swap allies who were, like, number ones, they went to different swaps and came in with, like, these games that were just not on the same path, she's out. Like, at that point, like, she's not sticking with it. And I think as well, like, with the alliance management, like, you would hope, you know, that someone isn't dictated to so strongly, but at the same time, like, she's also his wife. So, like, he's going to treat her in a really different way. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, from, like, their traditional sense, like not great alliance management, but like they are a married couple, different way to communicate. I also wanted to say before, let's talk about the idol of it all, but I wanted to say like one last thing on this, which is that she says, I don't want to be seen as riding your coattails. And it really stuck out to me because she's so aware. Do you ever hear that a man is riding a woman's coattails? No. Do women even, like, what is that? Like a tuxedo thing? Like, do women even have coattails? Women don't wear things that have coattails. Like, it's a specifically gendered history behind that, especially in romantic context. I mean, I rewatched All Stars recently. Like, Amber was not riding Boston Rob's coattails. They were like a partnership where, like, something like Steven and JT, when there's an alpha and a beta, not saying that they're the exact same, but when that kind of like dual male thing happens, we don't see it as riding coattails. We see it as like a pair with different dynamics in the pair. But when it's so easy to point to the woman, especially in a romantic sense, and say that she's riding his coattails, and her game has been too good to put it down to that. And I know that if she rides his coattails to the end and he wins, they both split the check. And I know they're a team and I know they're a unit, but her game matters. Her individual game and agency really matters in this. It's been so good. It's been so worthwhile. It's been an incredible pre-swap and post-swap, pre-merge. Look at the charts. Look at the Juicy charts. It deserves more than being Marks plus one. And I'm not sure because I think he's so caught up in his game, which has also been really good. I mean, he's been running things. I don't think he realizes that, like, her game has been really, really important too. And it's not just that she's been on the bottom and should fit into it. Like, she has her own thing going on.
Yeah, she's been kicking butt, and I just don't think he necessarily sees that because, again, he did not give himself the opportunity to with the decisions that he has made throughout the pre-merge that, again, he thought would better their game in the long run, but ends up giving them a surplus of allies in a manner of speaking. But I completely co-sign everything you said with the genderization of the term riding coattails. I did see something interestingly in the discourse this past week about, are Mark and Sam supposed to be sort of the Rob and Amber of this season? And it's very different. I think look no further than episode 13. This would have been if Rob and Amber had played together in Winners at War, I think. Because
I still don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, I think it would have been something closer a bit where they are coming in from different perspectives and coming more at loggerheads. You know, when they're playing together in All-Stars, they had certainly run in circles, but they're, you know, they're flirting with each other. They certainly want to work together, but there also is like sort of an individual spirit as well. And there's just an individual spirit here too. I don't think Sam would want to lose to Mark at the end of the day. I know that people will be like, well, still checking your, you know, your account at the end of the day. No, they're on the show because they're type A people who are competitive. Yeah, like, you know, they want the win. Anyone who's out there, with the exception of people that were recruited for their loved ones, want to go out there and win Survivor.
Yeah, like Sam, you had an epic pre-merge game, the best of pretty much of anyone, but your husband's going to drag you to the end where you have no say or no control. Your game actually just ended on day 26, but good news, you'll sit next to the end as he beats you however many votes to zero, but you get $500,000. Like, I guess I will take the money and I will spend it, but I also, that's not the game I've been playing, and I'm actually not willing to sacrifice the game I've been playing until now and say that it's over. I was actually having fun, and I'm still going with it, and I have many more weeks to play.
This is not San Juan del Sur, where it's like, okay, I will personally fall on my sword so that my loved one will go and we still share the money at the end of the day. I mean, look no further than the last challenge in last episode, which, Jonathan, this was not the first individual immunity challenge, where Khan is like, hey, Sam, I'll make you this deal where I'll give you the necklace if I win. So Sam's guaranteed individual immunity either way. Mm-hmm. She still has to be forcibly has to be taken off of that structure.
What a perfect analogy.
Where her body just gives out, shows how much it doesn't, like the idea of winning and the competition aspect in her overrides all. And it's an aspect that I'm not necessarily completely familiar with, but I can absolutely understand. And so I could see her perspective as well of, yeah, you know what? Mark winning would be fantastic. Me winning would be even better.
Yeah, well, I also think like, being sacrificed for your loved one, like say it comes to the final five and she has to like jump in front of the bullet and then like become Mark's jury vote, like I actually think that's even different to this. Like that's agency, like that's towards the end game, that's like, how am I pushing you to this thing, no point of us splitting votes at the end or something. I could see that part of it, And I honestly think that would be more agency than literally just like taking him by the hand and then just like going for the ride of the merge the whole time. Like, you're still there. You're not sacrificing yourself. It's not an active move, but you're literally just having to like passively sit there. Somehow is worse. But I honestly think, like, for Romba in Winners of War, I think that Amber was there completely for Rob. I think their hierarchy in Survivor is very clear. It's a Rob thing. She always says that, like, he should have won. Like, maybe it's different in their real lives. Maybe in parenting, it's like, go ask your mom. I don't know. But I don't think that Sam and Mark have that same dynamic. I think they're there very much individually for their own game. And I think that that was what was taken from Sam this week. But I want to talk about the idol. Because
yes.
I thought, I was like, this is so weird that the edit has not shown him telling her about the idol. I mean, there was always like, I always thought there was the possibility he's told her before they even catch up, like, at the same tribe, because, like, Amy said Khan had told her, she told him they had signs. Everyone kind of has these signs. You hug after a challenge, you think you might whisper it even before you hit emerge. And he kept saying, like, you really need a clue. Like, he was hinting it so hard that I was like, it's weird they're not actually just talking about the idol, but I assumed it was an editing thing. When Geordi says Mark has an idol, and, like, completely fine on Geordi. Like, how on earth would Geordi everything? Like, Geordi didn't misspeak here. Geordi's not, like, untrustworthy. That is such a fair and reasonable assumption. I genuinely don't know what... I feel like Mark went too deep undercover being a military man when he chose the other swap. Like, too deep into the doghouse that he couldn't see the light. That what you do is you tell your wife when you have an idol. Like, even knowing that, but could have been good. Like, she's worried enough to want to take the necklace from Khan. Like, she's obviously in a fine spot. If she knows Mark has an idol on the other side, like, maybe that's good for her game. How didn't he tell her, like, in a challenge hug, let alone, like, what she said on Twitter was 24 hours Geordi told her. Geordi told her after they merged.
I'm perplexed, Shannon. Yeah. I am utterly confused. Mark, you're a good guy. But this was idiotic.
I know, and it's indefensible. Like, I have devil's advocate stuff because I try to give people benefit of the doubt. What? What was he doing?
But there was no downsides to telling your wife in private that.
Well,
he says,
like, people may overhear, mouth it. He says things may leak. Wait, so then you're saying she's gonna leak it? She is your wife. You married her. You have a child with her. This is an idol. It's not a child. It's different. You look like
or
a sweet
or
little
say,
baby,
like,
oh, but
there
not.
Weren't times. There weren't times for us to speak privately. We saw a private conversation happen almost immediately after they got back to camp.
There's so many things. Like, yeah, I think a lot of people like, maybe that happened out of order. But she said, social media, it had been 24 hours. Like, when you're spooning at night, like, anything, any time. Like, there is literally no defense to this.
You don't need to show it to prove it. You don't need to draw a map to it. You just need to say it.
Okay.
Because she'll believe you.
Here's the devil's advocate. I've got two things.
Oh, boy. All right.
I've got two things because, I mean, it's completely indefensible. Okay. So the trauma from 2017, the fact that they were voted out for being a power couple and the fact that, like, consolidating it even further, they are married, but, like, maybe that trauma. And then also I feel like maybe just, like, ingrained duplicity from, like, 26 days when, like, you're on your guard and you forget that, like, this is your safe person. Like, you're okay. This is not an opponent in the game. Like, this is the mother of your child. Mark, what? What is going on? Truly. I said on Twitter that it made me wonder, just briefly, if, you know, Mark had gotten together with Sam, had a child with her, married her, and come on a Blood versus Water season with her just to blindside her in this moment. And then a commenter said that I was being a little dramatic. Can you imagine?
Just a smidge.
My
God.
No,
I think it makes sense. I mean, we know that Mark is a con man through and through.
Well, until he's not, you know?
Yeah, until he votes out con. Yeah, but yeah, he decides, like, in that moment, all right, I'm eyeing this woman. I know 5 years from now, I am going to marry
her. If we meet on the show and they ever do Blood versus Water,
yeah,
we're immediately going to get cast.
And just to help, I'm going to impregnate her just to, like, have her fall under my own spell.
Yeah,
and
baby trapped her.
I'm going to find an idol, and I'm not going to tell her about it. And then, oh, man, the look on her face. Oh, golly.
That blindside. Oh. That would be an amazing blindside. Like, it literally, it's 5 years in the making. A human was created for it. So no one else can say that. I mean, Harry could for a bit. But a real human... I would honestly respect the hustle, to be honest.
You should have seen it, Sam. If you spell our son's name backwards, it spells blindside.
Thank you for going on this journey with me.
I mean, it's just, it's, absolutely wild to me. I could think of no negatives to telling your wife in private that you have an outline. And I completely co-signed the thing about Jordy. We'll talk about Josh's now out of nowhere hate boner for Jordy and like, oh, my God. Oh, wait, here's the news. Mark has an idol. All right. What this tells me is Jordy cannot be trusted. That's the only piece of news that I gleaned from this. We'll certainly talk about that. But it's just wild to me that it's understandable. And listen, I've certainly come into those situations where like I've told a significant other of one of my friends of like, oh, yeah, when we're going to go do this thing. And they're like, wait, what? And I said, oh, yeah, you didn't know about that?
Oh, I do that all the time with Peter. I'm like, yeah, we're going out tonight. And he's like, what? But to be fair, I'm almost definitely sure that Peter just forgets. But then we like have this thing. It's like, did you? I'm like, no, do you think I didn't tell you? Or do you think that you forgot? And it's always that he forgot, to be honest.
Have you done a thing where you have like talked to one of Peter's friends?
And he's
like, oh, like the, oh, you know, oh, he's he didn't buy drinks at happy hour because he was buying you the proposal ring. And he's like, you're like, wait, he has a ring? And they're like, oh, yeah, I thought he already proposed to you. He's bought a ring and everything.
Yeah, like, no, I do this with Survivor. Like, I'll talk to maybe you or to Jason about something. And then I'll say to Peter, like, didn't I tell you that? He's like, no. I'm like, well, I spoke to someone else about it.
Yeah. Oh, I mix Sam and Jordy up all the time. They have an incredibly similar aesthetic. They both wear overalls.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. We could podcast for the next 5 hours, and at this point it looks like we probably will, and we could never come to a resolution of why Mom did this.
So all that being said, again, this is why I loved everything Mark and Sam going on in the Merge episode. And I still will support them. I still, you know, have my stand card from the pre-merge. I'm so happy that they cast them for many reasons. I think they're incredibly, they're really interesting characters in their own right, and especially together. And it just shows how incredibly messy blood versus water can be. That when you bring outside dynamics inside a season like Survivor that has its own dynamics therein, it just gets, it gets weird and it gets ugly a little bit as well.
Was it fun? I don't know that it was fun, but it was one of the most compelling episodes of television I've watched in a very long time.
Yeah, I think in an era of Survivor nowadays where it has become a bit more about strategy and twists and less so about personal drama, this is incredibly personal drama.
Exactly.
Maybe even overly personal drama.
it was too much. Take it back. No, I feel like they're competing against Married at First Sight on the other network. And they just, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. Like, we're in couples therapy, Married at First Sight right now. You know, I guess that was season two, and we're like, you know, watching the evolution to now. Let's get into a little bit more just from this, like, general dynamics at the Merge. As we've heard about, like, the rare treat that was last week, hearing about the guys running things. Jordan says you don't usually have this many dudes. Fact check, because there's 7 of the top 13 here were guys. So in 2018, that was true. 2019 had 9, and All Stars also had 8. Pretty much all except the last season. In saying that, I've explained. I understand the girls vibe of last season with the winner disparity, with the fact that apparently Sandra told the guys, you know, because when, you know, the weak will outnumber the strong, they were like, well, maybe if there are no weak in quotation marks and we just stay with the beefy guys thing, then we solved it.
Hear you loud and clear, Sandra. Get rid of all the weak people. Thank you for guiding us in that way. The monkey's paw of saying, oh, okay, don't worry. It's, you know, vote out the strong, then the weak, then the strong. And they're like, okay, got it. Vote out the weak. Thanks, Sandra. You certainly guided us in our way.
No, but I don't think that they're, like, completely wrong. Like, as I've said, there's, like, precedent to it. I think they were reading parts of it. And Mel had some really good insights in the exit about how they just, like, had a lot in common. Like, she's like, they were talking about, like, beer and whiskey. Like, the guys' things that men can connect over that I personally and Mel didn't really know much about. And then it just kind of naturally goes that way. And then when they aren't being targeted at the Merge, someone like Mark, who has been kind of flagged as what could be a Merge target and wasn't at all, it's working. It's unpleasant, but it's working. But it's just kind of funny that it came from Sandra, who was definitely like rolling over in her, you know, American mansion. But I think that there's, you know, it's not rare to have that many dudes, but they are wielding it very actively, I will say.
And what I will say that makes this a little different is that I could understand their perspective from the aesthetics of it all. Because I spoke about this when David won All Stars, that, like you said, the gender imbalance isn't necessarily there. But David sticks out for many reasons, both from a storytelling perspective and like what he represents, which is an alpha male. And I love me some Jericho, but I would not necessarily say he played a very quote unquote alpha male game. The game that, you know, we sort of decry Jeff Probst for really celebrating and perhaps throwing in some production elements to benefit from them. Australian Survivor isn't really a game that does that. Like you said, it's the tall poppies, it's the parabolic women, et cetera, et cetera. It favors more so people that are able to ride the middle or go under the radar just because of how marathon-like the game is. And so I could see, and you spoke about this a bit with the Abby stuff from All Stars last week as well, if there are people that are paying attention to that president, that they say, okay, look, there's a bunch of us that usually go out in a string of boots in the middle of this merge. What if instead we worked together because we're the ones that are usually targeted? We have strength and we have strength in numbers, so we can guarantee someone like us who doesn't usually win the game does. Where the discrepancy comes from is the fact that these types of people often succeed in life. Mm-hmm. And I think that Earl Cole put this incredibly well in a very, very different environment when talking about Survivor. But he said, Survivor shouldn't be a reflection of society. It should be a utopia, in a manner of speaking. And I do think a lot of the just negative response to this alliance incredibly recently, but even when it started to be formulated on Bloodier, comes from the fact that men, and especially white men, are like used to being in positions of power and positions of influence in our day to day and in control of a lot of things that happen in our daily lives. And I think a lot of people look to a show like Survivor to either get away from that or, in a perfect world, give sort of a franchise a disenfranchised, in a manner of speaking. Give the people who may not necessarily have that voice or that influence just due to optics the ability to play the game and be in that position of power that they always wanted to. And the pattern that is happening right now is repeating, that this is something that happens in society as well, and now it is happening on Survivor. And so I can understand why people are unhappy with it, but I do see at the same time why these guys, at least for the moment, because we'll talk about maybe what's to come, have this mentality of, look, let's work together. It's like, it's not even a meat shield, it's a big blob of meat. You know, all the meats have sort of converged together to love say that. Hey, now we're sort of stronger, so that if anything tries to pierce us, it has to go through several layers instead of, you know, just booking one or two strong guys. Let's make sure that we don't get singled out for being that strong type by working together.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's never going to be a utopia for much of the Survivor fandom when a bro-y white guy wins. And maybe due to society and the way that international Survivor, US Survivor has gone, maybe that's fair. But at the same time, like, bro-y white guys are entitled to want to win and try to win. And I think what might be a hard pill to swallow for the fandom is that they're doing really well at it. Like, they're doing so well. And I think that a lot of the frustration around the lack of flips, and we can talk about them now, that the two times that they had to flip this week that they didn't, a lot of the frustration around that is like, the majority are doing very, very well to make sure that people don't flip against them. Like, you might be angry at the people on the bottom, but like, they're kind of getting outplayed by a group that did put in that work in those numbers in the pre-merge to kind of get to this position and have worked it really, really well from here. There's the fact that we have a 6 of 13, not a majority, not you know, Brad helped with the math, but it's not, because someone like Juicy Dave clearly thinks that he's part of that, that he's part of the committee, that he's in with the guys, and now you have a majority, and someone like Khan is with Sam, who's in that, Chrissy's probably in that, KJ has wanted to be with the guys, the people on the bottom are against each other, like, in the Khan vote, it's not even like, is it going to be Khan or Josh, like, no, it's Khan or Shay and Mel, like, all the people on the bottom are being voted for, and Mel said to me, she wanted Khan. So it's about putting the bottom people against each other, it's about really snowing them in about, like, what the numbers really are until it became pretty transparent in ways, not with Juicy Day, but with the women in the second vote. It's about a really great split on the second vote. They have consolidated it. They're actually doing really, really well at it. And I think that in terms of like passing out frustration to the people on the bottom, maybe that should be flipped to praise for how well the people on the top are doing at consolidating that.
And that's a tough thing to do in the fandom as well. I think I talked about this back in Ghost Island, that there is oftentimes an inverse relationship between good strategy and good entertainment, that the best strategy often makes for the worst television, right? We look at some of the most dominant games in Survivor history, is your Boston Robs in Redemption Island, your Kim Spradlins in One World, where they were absolutely dreadful seasons, in part because the gameplay was so rote and it really did go by the numbers. And you could sort of lambast some people for, you know, not necessarily making decisions that were going to completely optimize their win equity. But at the same time, you really have to prop up those that are doing a good job. And yeah, I mean, look, is it an immaculate game? No, we can certainly talk about Josh's big mouth at Tribal Council when he flat out says, like, yeah, we're on the top and everyone else is, you know, essentially beneath us. But I do think that the work they have put in so far is good. Like you said, Juicy Dave working with them, I think it was obviously not seen. But if my assumption is they get rid of someone like Amy, and then they're like, okay, now that your closest allies are gone, like, work with us instead of them.
You're a guy. That's good. You're a guy.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a good recruitment on their part to be able to be like, okay, you're a free agent. Let's pick you up. You know, same thing with KJ. Smart choice, apparently, for them to pick her to swap over, because that's someone that they can easily say, hey, we saved you from a possible, you know, outcome where you could have been voted out next. Like, they had made a good amount of moves. It's frustrating to watch, but it's also, you have, at the same time, objectively, I think it is good gameplay, even if it is not the most entertaining nor the most, I don't know, satisfying to watch.
Because now they are the majority. They are actually 6 of 11. They got through any kind of plurality happening there that could have come against them. And I think that when they were the majority, what frustrates people is that it looks like it should be chess. Especially when there's like a split involved and there's some capabilities. Like, just tell Dave. They just, firstly, just know the groups perfectly, which I think kind of became way more clear in that second episode, especially at Tribal, but like was not as clear in the first episode. So just know the dynamics as well as we do with the Frankenbitten confessionals. And then just go and tell Dave that you who have never worked with him or who've really not been with him versus these guys
who
he's
just,
been working
maybe just
with,
met him
yeah,
the
exactly.
day before.
Yeah. Versus these guys he's been working with for several days. Like, he's not on the top with them. And you know that because you are also getting the confessionals like we are. And then you can just tell him and then you guys will just swap. And it's like, oh, well, we'll just do that. It's not chess. Like, it's not clear like that. That's why they're doing so well, and that's the beauty of Survivor, that it's not super clear to someone like Juicy Dave. Like, obviously Juicy Dave should be working with the women to flip, and if he had in the second vote or in any vote, and you know, it could happen, but that's not how he sees the game. And he's also a passive player who's probably really happy to ride with this majority, or the majority is not even in, for as long as it takes him, even if he's on the bottom of it. So it's also about people, it's also about the personality. So I think a lot of that frustration I think there was so much frustration last night, and we'll talk about it. That frustration should have been directed at the first night, because Josh vocalizes it really, really well. This is why I think Josh is smart. But it would have taken, because Khan has the idol, it just takes Mel to tell Michelle, hey, they're voting for Khan. So Mel and Michelle, so now no longer do Michelle and Khan vote for Shay. Let's vote for Josh. Mel, let's jump off her majority vote where she's on Khan. So now they're not a 7, they're a 6. And then there was 4 people on the beta who were all people who could have flipped. As Josh said, it just would take one more woman. Let's say Chrissy, who looks left out of the vote. Hey, it's going to be Khan. You guys were crying about how much you loved each other. Let's be a 4. Idol gets played on Khan. 4 votes now are on Josh. 4-3. They win the vote. That's where the opportunity was there, with Khan with an idol. But it's Mel saying to me, I wanted Khan out. Like, you really needed Khan. That's where the opportunity to flip. It's not just Chrissy. They could have taken, you know, KJ at that point, although KJ wants to be the Iron Lady. You could take Shay, who's being directly targeted. Like, it literally would have taken 3 people who actually got votes in this tribal council. Shay, Mel, and Khan, and Michelle, the sister of someone getting votes. Those 4 people and an idol, and you could win. Those numbers are there, but these people are working against each other. Again, it's a credit to the majority, but yes, that potential did very much exist in the merge vote.
Yeah, I love that you crunch those numbers. It's tough because, you know, I think that Steven has talked about this. Splitting a vote can be so excruciating to do when you're on Survivor, especially as the days get up there. How wild is it, by the way, that we talked about 2 votes that happened in 2 days that in an American season of Survivor now wouldn't have happened, right? The game would have stopped on day 26, and these votes happened on days 27
and
28.
Yeah, that's when Khan wins 60 grand, right? And that's
yeah, I mean,
that
would have been like the mini season of Survivor. Yeah. It's absolutely wild. But I find it interesting that they split votes pretty much along gender lines here, right? Well, then with the Mel-Michelle vote, it gets a little bit more dicey.
Well, Mel has to vote for Khan because she can't vote for herself. Although, honestly, at this point, I don't doubt that she might have. Like, how are you on your own split, Mel?
But I do find it interesting that ordinarily that's fine, but due to the hierarchy, you know, the majority, the people who are sort of at the top of this pecking order all put their votes onto Khan. So in theory, like you said, but in theory, like you said, the people who are quote unquote on the bottom, the people who are saying make a move, aka Shay, Sam, KJ, Chrissy, etc., Michelle thrown there as well, like, oh, they were theoretically on the beta, so they could force that plurality if they want to, or just pile the votes onto somebody else and Khan plays the idol. It's one of those rare circumstances where just due to the dynamics in general, when you're splitting a vote amongst a big alliance, like, don't make it as apparent as, hey, the people on the top vote one way, the people on the other, on the bottom vote another way, because again, that's a very clear show as to where people stand. Mm-hmm. It just so happens here that I think they picked a very easy split in gender.
Yeah.
And it also just so happens that
the power dynamics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's an interesting coincidence to me that, yeah, this theoretically could have happened because the people that were voting on the beta and then theoretically had that power there to sort of tip Khan off and throw their votes onto someone like Josh also happened to be the people on the bottom because of the way the alliance is sort of gendered.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they made it worse for themselves in just trying to make it look casually gendered, really simple. Let's, like, put a majority of the men onto Khan. Like, it would have been better for them to put more of those primary allies onto the beta because Khan does have this, like, really pressing idol. Then it means that, you know, Khan can't win with four votes and an idol. He needs five votes, then more people have to flip. Like, it literally could have just been Shay getting votes. Could have just been Chrissy, who he's close to, and the twins. That's all that he needed. But again, like, that's the thing, is that Mel is coming for Khan. Like, as much as it looks like, oh, you kind of left yourself open on the split here in a way that they did in the next episode, they also, I think, are correctly reading, like, how much on lock this is. That KJ is with them, that she's not necessarily doing that. That Chrissy is being Snow, doesn't even know that it's Khan. That the twins are not working, or Mel is not working with Khan, despite the fact that, like, she's on the second of the split and will go home next. Michelle doesn't have power in that. Like, they're aware of the fact that they have it sewn up and they don't have to be, like, really tricky with the way it's being split, because unlike the next vote, people aren't necessarily looking to capitalize on that split. And again, that's a credit to them.
So now let's go back to the idol play of it all. I mean, listen, I'm also just flabbergasted that they finally were able to figure out, okay, if we want to split a vote to make Khan possibly play his idol, we should give him the majority of votes on a tribe. I will say, going back, I don't know. I think there could have been a way for Sam to possibly tip off Connor. I don't know.
I don't think
maybe
so.
Like,
come on. I don't know. I just put myself in that position and I think about someone I have not met yet, or I will spend 3 weeks with versus, or, you know, 3.5 weeks versus my husband. Like, in what universe? Like, I just have to back it. Like, I would just never blow up my spouse's game like that, and possibly my own, for, like, I just can't endorse that way of thinking. It's against everything in my being.
Do you think if the secondary vote had been on Shay rather than Mel, that would have given her more of an impetus to do that?
No, I don't, because, I mean, the secondary vote could have been on Shay. Like, it's about taking Chrissy, and Chrissy says that she and Sam had a fight. Like, Chrissy wasn't even in the know. Like, she just has to change her vote from Mel to Shay, and so does Chrissy, and then Shay is the secondary vote. Like, these things can be done. The numbers were there. The idol was there. The power was there for her to do it. But every one of those moves is against Mark, and she can't do that. Like, she has her own connections from her swap tribe, and, you know, through the game. But it's not even just that. Like, it's screwing over Jesse, who is probably her primary connection, probably before even someone like Khan. Like, it's not the game that she was. That she was able to play. It really, she had to go with those numbers, but the problem was that she couldn't convince those numbers to what she wanted.
Now, that is a really good point that I'm very excited that we brought up, is this idea of how she, it's not just, okay, Sam only works with Mark and she only works with Khan, that there is this incredible relationship with Jesse that I would say, if Mark is one, you know, Jesse is really one.
I love the dynamic. Game. Like, the way that defending her, almost more than Mark was, like, the way that they're like, oh, we don't really know how to work with Sam. Jesse's like, no, she's cool, I'm telling you. Like, I just love their little, I love their relationship. I do.
I don't think, I can't remember if we talked about it preseason. It just makes so much sense also, right? That they, like, connect over being triathletes, and that they sort of have
only
that
an Australian survivor. They connect over being triathletes.
Exactly.
Australian survivor needs to chill.
They connect over the millions of Instagram followers that they have. Mm-hmm. There's so many commonalities you can find on Australian Survivor.
Yeah.
But we also need to remember, you know, that Jesse has his own relationship. And obviously she would not make something that I don't think Jesse would not be aware of.
And he tends to Jordy because Jordy has the power. Like, Jordy literally, same as Mark, comes into the relationship at the merge with the power. And Jordy is leaning on the natural hierarchy that he has as the brother. So that's Jesse's lack of agency as much. Like, and again, it feels more natural, so it doesn't feel as uncomfortable. And he's not fighting against it to, you know, in the same way that Sam is. He's much more happy to go with a guy's thing as a guy. And, you know, she has that connection with Khan. But, like, he also is getting into that beta position of the relationship, and so is Sam. And that's what's so interesting about these two duos who are working together.
So, that being said, looking at all this with Khan, was it a blessing or a curse that he got that idol from Juicy Dave?
Man, the idols have been a curse this whole season.
I know. We had one played correctly, and that's it.
Who?
Oh, no. Amy.
Juicy Dave. Oh, yeah. That's true. I forget about Juicy Dave.
Yeah, and Amy didn't play hers correctly, right? Because Jay was the majority.
No, well, if the previous Leon was to be believed, she did, but no. Jay was the primary. She flushed her idol. Juicy Dave. Oh, my God. Juicy Dave, the idol king of the season. I literally forgot that he actually saved himself. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So it's wild. And I love that. I talked about how much I love this in Survivor 41, right? And we talked about this in the beginning, how the public idols, I think, were a really fun way of doing things where honestly, sometimes things get a bit stale with the hidden idols and the vote splitting, et cetera, of you never know who has an idol. I do think adding in the wrinkle of when you know someone has an idol, what happens with it? And we see an interesting experiment play out here in the dual cases of the two targets here at the merge in Shay and Khan, where as weird as it was, Shay kind of says, as Sugar does when she hands her idol off to Maddie, like, rid me of this accursed thing. I'm going to play it right now just to, like, get it out of the way so people don't keep freaking voting for me. Versus Khan, who I think has, on top of this apparently piling resume, the fact that he does have an idol might push him over the top to get targeted over someone like Shay. I just find it really interesting, but it's something really unique to look back on that Khan got this all the way back in episode 3, 10 episodes later, he goes home with it in his pocket. But I do wonder, you know, if he doesn't come back with that idol, and who knows, maybe if he isn't as upfront with his tribe about it, do they still suspect him of it? I'm not entirely sure, but ever since then, every single vote, pretty much, except for the Croc vote, they had said, okay, we're going to have Khan. Someone's going to write down Khan's name. And I really do wonder, in an alternate universe, if he didn't have an idol, would that be the case? And would he be able to just charm his way into maybe more of a negotiable, less noticeable position?
Yeah, and Shay is in a tough spot and has been in a tough spot where she's relied on immunities she's been able to win. But in this, you know, one person competition in terms of like running in the light, you know, with the lion chasing you and you're just faster than the person next to you.
Oh, I'm so happy you love that metaphor, Shannon.
Every podcast we have to use it. Khan having an idol made him more threatening than her. I think there were other things at play, but like in that way it helped her. In other ways it could have been the reason she was sent home. Like, it's a bit results oriented to be like, see, it worked. But I also do think that it speaks to the fact that it was a legitimate play. It was a strange play. It was probably against everything we know to be true, but it has had merit and it has had its extreme difficulties, but it's continued to speak to the kind of player that Shay is.
Yeah, it's this idea of, okay, this is usually an instrument of power, but it makes me powerless in a way, specifically in the manner that everybody knows about it. And that's the fun thing that I enjoy about idols, is that they can be instruments of power, but they very much lose it when some people know about it, and especially when everybody knows about it, right? Because then it just becomes a talking point. People are looking for reasons to vote for people, to write someone's name down. If you write down Shay's name and she doesn't play her idol and she comes back, it's like, well, I had to write your name down because you had an idol. And so you almost are like able to personally excuse yourself and hope that Shay does as well and assume the same thing with Khan, as opposed to, you know, Shay uses her idol. And then in a manner of speaking, it's a way of saying like, all right, this will hopefully do away with the reasons for people to vote for me now. It doesn't end up happening due to just, you know, how everything shakes out post swap. But I just find it an interesting duality of, I think, how Shay viewed the public idol situation versus Khan. And I do really congratulate Khan.
We've really made use of the Khan puns in this podcast.
We won't be able to talk about him besides of his incredible outfits on the jury for the rest of the season until Final Tribal Council. But I just find it interesting that he was able to sit on that for an incredible amount of time, you know, despite the fact that every single vote is like, well, we should throw some votes Khan's way. And it could easily go if one or two people change their votes, and they should have, that he's gone. Again, that's not how you do a split vote, people, to flush somebody's idol. The fact that he had the social read to be able to figure out, okay, it truly isn't on me tonight, I can really play it when I need it, is great.
Is it?
That being said, I mean, yeah, that being said,
and Julie gets blindsided with it.
Exactly. It's not great when he actually did know that he needed to do it and just didn't realize it whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, that's every single time. Even before he got blindsided with the idol, it was like, because I've had it before, you know, where it's like, oh, good job. Oh, wow, you didn't play it again. Wow, you know, super courageous. Oh, you went home with it. You know what? Maybe you were holding on to it too tight the whole time. Maybe you should have been a little bit more liberal with it. And Khan, unfortunately, is just another person who kind of falls into that trap. But, you know, had they had Khan and his idol, these people on the bottom, I think, would have had a lot more options. Like, if we can talk about the second vote, because people were so mad that people didn't flip. And so we need to talk about it from...
let's crunch some numbers.
Yeah.
Let's crunch some numbers.
Well, we need to talk about it from three perspectives, because I saw kind of anger across the board. So the first one, I want to talk about the five women, not including Sam, because Sam is in the majority with Mark, and if voting against her husband is, again, something I just won't... Well, we'll talk about it, but I won't really entertain. But then you have Dave. So that leaves five women. You've got Chrissy, KJ, Mel, Michelle, and Shay. And these are... And the five women are important because... I think when it's like committee and it's guys, they're the five in this very transparent tribal council that are shown to be on the bottom. So then how can you not flip? And people were so mad about that. And it made me upset. And I tweeted about it, and I got a little hate for the tweet. But honestly, KJ just responded saying spot on. And that to me is worth it, because I want to give voice to the fact that these women are getting hate, like proper hate. Oh, they don't have self-respect. They're gutless. People, please, please count the split. That's the first thing that I did when I saw, okay, this is how the votes came out. I thought, could the women flip? Like, they didn't, but was it a choice or was it taken from them? And it was a brilliant split that you have to credit to Josh. The perfect split where this seven-person majority, if you include Sam and Dave clearly thinks he's in it. Sam is part of the majority. Split it 5-2. So if these five women pile on Josh, it's a 5-5-2, and they will lose at the revote. So you can be mad that, I guess, that things haven't shifted in previous votes, in the vote before. But the level of vitriol, I mean, never be that vitriolic, but the level of vitriol that I saw last night to the women who literally didn't have the numerical option, it was in an intersection of pain of hate to women and misreading a split vote that I didn't think that would ever happen. But I think it was personally made to upset me. And I will also say, not everyone in the fandom, and I've seen some pretty dark places of the fandom in the last 24 or so hours. Mm-hmm. Obviously, small minority. But that minority, like, there is the lightning speed with which people will go from criticizing what they see as a misogynistic men's alliance to berating women for not doing what they want when they don't even have the numerical option is instantaneous. And that, to me, is just wild.
Okay, so I do feel like I just want to drill down further onto this, because just to explain what happened here for people.
It's important.
Who don't
tell your friends. Like, everyone promised me you're going to go and tell one friend. I told my dad last night. He said, why didn't they flip? I said, Dad, they couldn't. They didn't have the numbers. He said, good to know. You go tell one friend that they did not have the numbers to split. We're going to break it down. Yes.
All right. So as you mentioned, there is this alliance of seven, right? There is the quote-unquote strong six, which is Jesse, Jordy, Josh, Jordan, the J's, plus Juicy Dave, Mark.
Who's a J?
And Sam.
Juicy. Yeah.
He's sort of like an adopted J, I think.
Exactly.
Like the Juicy is in who's in parentheses. So those seven. Five votes of those seven went on to Mel.
Mm-hmm.
Two went on to Michelle. So therefore, like you said, those seven were always going to vote for those people. You cannot change their minds. So theoretically, you would say, okay, so the other five just all need to vote for Josh and then they'll be fine, right? They'll win on a plurality. No, because again, the split in the seven was 5-2. There are five people that you mentioned that were not in this alliance. So like you said, the best they could hope for is five votes Mel, five votes Josh, two votes Michelle. Then they would go to a revote in which the alliance would win out the day, because they would have, six votes
six to four. Yeah, because
obviously
the Michelle votes, we don't have those anymore. Josh doesn't get a vote. Mel doesn't get a vote. But then So, yeah, no more Michelle votes. They went on the revote because they split the vote. So that's what it is. We don't know if they would have flipped. I think that they should have flipped, obviously. Like, that would have been so epic. Had they split it wrong? Because I thought, well, what if they split it 4-3? But they didn't. Had they split it 4-3 and the woman could come over the top and went 5-4-3, yeah, that would be the most epic move of the season. Amazing. It would be a plurality vote. You think, I don't want to see a plurality vote? Of course, that would literally be the most epic thing. Twitter would have been in flames, but the good kind. But it wasn't possible. So please stop flaming the women for something that they were numerically positioned not to be able to do. Again, a credit to the majority and to Josh for that. Would they have flipped? Don't know. Have to ask them in exits. Obviously, Mel, that's what she's trying to do. Michelle votes for Geordie. I assume that she knows that it's not happening.
Yeah, my assumption is that it's sort of a matter of, okay, well, we don't want to, like, you know, the big thing, right, was Michelle not wanting to tick off somebody or for, like, mm-hmm. the blame to fall onto Michelle. So I could see something where it's like, yeah. Hey, throw a vote to Geordie. Also, Geordie's voting for Michelle, right? So it's just like exchanging shots across the bow. Like I said, if you need a reason to write someone's name down, it could be as simple as that, as opposed to, hey, she wrote down Josh's name and now she really is all by herself because now she's the only person left who wrote down his name.
Well, I just assume that you may see her talking to Jordan. Jordan, to his credit, does seem close to these people on the bottom. Shay, Michelle, and she doesn't want to vote for Jordan's cousin. She knows Josh is really powerful. She doesn't see Geordie as having as powerful a place in the alliance. She doesn't want to vote for her sister, which is something she probably could have done because I think she knows that it's done. They know how it's being split, how, like, they're being split. And you even see Michelle asking Jordan, like, who's voting for me? I think they're aware of the numbers. I think they're aware of the fact that this couldn't happen numerically. So would they have flipped? Mel and Michelle, obviously, yes. That's something they would have wanted to do. KJ has wanted to be the Iron Lady, but I think seems like the kind of player who could smartly see the numbers. Also, she did just respond to that tweet saying spot on. So it kind of feels like she was trapped by the numbers there. Chrissy's close to Sam, seemed non-committal. I'm not super sure about Chrissy, but again, we don't know. And Shay has known that she's the target, so I assume she would want to. I kind of feel like maybe the numbers would have been there. Chrissy is the question mark, but we couldn't do it. Tell a friend, guys. Make this the way that we change the world. Tell a friend that they could not come over the top with a split. It's really, really important to me because there's so much misinformation. I've like literally gone around Twitter just explaining to people individually because it's, yeah, I know that it's messy with the numbers and stuff. 5-5-2 couldn't be done. Please stop flaming the
I love, speaking of Chrissy, the scene where, you know, Michelle and Mel are proposing this plan and they're like, okay, go tell Chrissy. And it cuts to Chrissy, who was sitting like 10 feet away the entire time. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like, oh, I didn't realize that she was right there. But
hey, Chrissy, yeah.
But I mean, to Chrissy, and I love Chrissy for this, but this is Chrissy, her being like, oh yeah, I wasn't really listening. What's happening? Mm-hmm. I'm just sitting here cooking all day. Which I will give credit to Chrissy that, you know, Khan, I think, was able to really cut a swath for himself in the game a bit by being that chef. And I do wonder how much of it is Chrissy doing it purposefully and being like, maybe people will sort of look under the radar for me now, or if it's just her being like, ah, somebody needs to cook. But I think it's a good credit on Chrissy's part to become the new chef of this tribe. Let me also say, to sort of, while we're sort of decrying some of the internet response as well, because let's go to one of my Survivor pet peeves, Shannon, that I've seen levied about consistently over the past 24 hours. The criticism that people are not, quote unquote, playing the game. Oh, makes me shudder. I really dislike this comment because it is fundamentally untrue. Whether you are in the game or you are out of the game, to say like, oh, well, this person isn't playing the game. I don't even know why they cast this person. They're clearly not there to play. It's not true. Now, look, there is a difference between an active and a passive game. As you said, Shannon, you invoked that several times. I think that is incredibly valid, but everyone there is playing the game. Look no further than something like Survivor Redemption Island, where what's the common wisdom behind that? Oh, Boston Rob just whipped a bunch of zombies into shape and mindlessly walked them to the end. No. If you dig deeper, all of those people plan to go to the end with Boston Rob, because unless Boston Rob was sitting next to the exact configuration of Natalie and Philip, he would have lost. He would have lost to anybody else sitting next to him. And so everyone else was playing the game. Why were they working with Boston Rob? Because, hey, when we get to the end, I'll be sitting next to him and I'll be his Amber in a manner of speaking. I will take the votes and that's my path to $1 million. If we're looking at some of these people, that very much may be the plan as well. You know, we'll talk about the splits that are apparently already emerging within Boys R Us. It could very well be that they know it's eventually happening and they say, I want to be around to be picked up as that vote and guarantee myself a better voting block than whatever we're trying to arrange right here, right now. So, yes, I can absolutely understand if you feel in this moment, okay, there was a plan laid out and these people chickened out on it. But I think if you give it a bit more thinking, as Shannon is sort of encouraging you to do, there is some method to the madness as to how they're sort of seeing things, whether it's just be one day at a time or much more down the line. And at the same time, they are making purposeful decisions for the sake of their game to win $500,000. Nobody is there just being like, whatever. Well, let me go wander off and, you know, go swimming or something. People are there. They have the intention to win. They would not be starving themselves out there on the proverbial island of Australia if they didn't have some sort of compulsion to play the game. It's just a matter of how active that gameplay is versus passive. But I cannot say that no one out there is, quote unquote, not playing the game.
Yeah, like if you know that you can't win numerically, I did a podcast with Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz on like the psychology of Survivor. Yeah, piling on and getting your foot in the door is the thing to do. You know, just voting for Josh, 5 votes that are going to do nothing, just so that someone on Twitter, who I can only assume was decrying the men's alliance and the misogyny of it yesterday, can decide that you have self-respect for piling votes on someone who can't go home. Yeah, that's not a play. The play is to just keep going with the numbers because you don't have the numbers. Again, that might be the faults of the past. Not saying that they couldn't have flipped previously. But on this vote, the numbers were not there. It was split well. And just piling on Josh to make Twitter happy, that's not the move. The move is that they're now biding their time and they're now waiting for a, you know, split in the boys. People were mad about Sam, though, and we need to talk about it because, you know, with either Sam or Juicy Dave, who were both on the primary vote, this could have happened. It would have been 6 votes for the women, 6 votes with Sam, or either the five women and Juicy Dave, and it could have happened. I've pretty much called my shot in this, that I don't see like how she can go against Mark, but did you see like any play for Sam here?
No, because this feels more like a direct shot, right? Unless, and we even see this early in the episode, where Sam is telling Mark, I'm not so sure about Josh, and Mark's like, nah, we're good. So it's not like she could even take his read as, oh, okay, so I know that Mark is leery of Josh as well, so we're fine taking him out. No, he has vehemently disagreed, and again, not to say that he's the one necessarily in control of their dynamic here, but I think she wants to make a decision where they can both turn their keys on something.
Yeah.
And at this point, Mark did not want to turn his key on it, and this feels like, again, more of a direct shot at his ally than someone like Shay or Khan, who, yes, while, you know, while more like tangential or more directly related to Sam's alliance, is not directly in Mark's alliance of, okay, you know, oh my God, I can't believe Shay of all people, but she's the godmother to my child now. What are you talking about? We can't take her out. There's much less of a strategic and personal connection there. I will say what did not help the response to this episode, I do wish, and I'm happy that we're going back to 2 a week just for my own personal consumption taste. I do kind of wish there were 3 this week because I really get the sense that next week Boys R Us is closing down. And I think that people would be able to look back on this with a better taste in their mouths when and if and when they know that, like, this is not the status quo. Mm-hmm. The strong 6 is not going to be the final 6. I can absolutely guarantee that.
I think as well that the edit, you know, obviously because it has to, we have to keep people not switching over to Married at First Sight, and any survivor would do this, maybe not Survivor South Africa, but most franchises would, you know, build it up. Is Sam going to do this? It felt like a flip could happen. And then especially during that tribal council when it was like becoming really, really transparent of the people on the bottom, you know, it kind of led people in that direction. But I think as well, like, you know, we should be looking more closely at the split. But I think that it showed that Sam would have this opportunity, but it's not even her plan. Like, also, she just, like, met Mel. It's Mel's plan. It's, like, numbers that she has there are, like, with, like, Michelle and KJ, who she said was, like, on the bottom of Weta. Shay, who she's been working against. Like, it's not her plan. It's not her people. She would just kind of be complicit in this thing against her husband. Like, it's not even as strong a response as, like, wanting to save Khan. It's literally just, like, the numbers that are there. So, again, it's against Jesse. It's against Mark. It's just not the move for her. As much as you want it to be, as much as everyone wanted it to happen, people can't just make moves to appease Twitter. And that's a fun thing to find out about Survivor. So, the bed was made at the merge. At this point, she and Mark And the bed was made many, many years ago. I don't mean it to go that way.
Hopefully.
I'm saying they are a unit, they are a partnership, and hopefully it'll be on more equal footing. But yeah, she's not making this move against Mark, and she's probably never making a move against Mark ever in the game. So he's going to have to play ball a little bit with her ideas. It wasn't going to be this. It wasn't going to be with Mel against, at this point, what is her alliance? Sorry to say, but that would have been a pretty inconsistent strategy for this week, really, really soon after so strongly going with the guys to send a primary ally in Khan home to then flip on that. It was just never going to happen. Sorry that it disappointed people, but yeah, that's what's not happening.
And it did disappoint. Like, I do not want to write that over. It sucked. It sucked to watch, especially again with the way, Josh sort of like composed himself at Tribal Council, right? Like I love it because it is entertaining TV when people, you know, don't skirt around JLP's questions and Josh flat out says like, yeah, you know what? There's a majority alliance. It started all the way back on Water 2.0.
But he protects on the
now.
Split. I know, that's who he is. That's like the type of player that he is. He is a really transparent player. But and I'm not endorsing that. But I also think like then they don't flip on him either. And it's because of all the things he's put in place. Like it is because why didn't they just get Juicy Dave? As I've said, because Josh and the boys have put in that work. And I think it's difficult as well when you have more passive middle players like a Dave, like a Chrissy, or someone we're talking about. Like Chrissy is an amazing character, but it doesn't necessarily translate to like active strategy. And these are the middle players that need to come out and rescue the people on the bottom. Someone like Khan might have been that person. But there isn't a lot of that happening with the people on the bottom until literally they're being told to their face, hey, you're going to be the targets tonight. Like Mel got voted for a couple of times ago and has been an option for so long. And still it took her this long to really like light a fire under it. So it's the personality types of the people who should be in the middle, who should be in the bottom. It's that passive play. And it's how well someone like Josh has done it to the point where he can say we have a majority and he split the votes well enough and he has snowed the right people and consolidated the right numbers to the point where he actually can't get targeted in that way and he gets only one vote. It's not maybe the best way to play. It's not the way that we would say like, hey, you know, definitely tell people to be that transparent, but at least in that transparency, like he has it on lock right now.
All right. So that being said, let's sort of assuage people's fears here, Stanton, because the J Civil War is upon us. I'm calling it Jivel Jor. If you will,
rolls
where
off the tongue.
It really
we
does,
can do and then so just, much better
than Jivel Jor.
You say it again. I'm thinking
it
like
works.
J date, which is like the you guys have like the Jewish dating site is J date. That's why you have a J date, and what that date is for is war
or like D day, J day,
J day. Yeah, J day. I like J date because it's. Jewish dating flat.
All right, so
but that just equals me. That's fine.
J day, J date, or the much more preferable Jivel Jor.
We're going to have to do a Twitter poll
because what we're dealing with here is some odd stuff happening. Where and I thought at first, like I did think we were getting 2016 at first. To be completely candid, right? That we were going through the stretch of honestly, when I recommend Australian Survivor to people, I say. There is only one period of the show that you may entirely skip, and it is like a good chunk of episodes in season one. And even Nick was like, yeah, this is starting to feel a bit familiar, where there was so much material of like, oh, something might happen. Oh, nothing happened.
It's been one episode of that, like, to be fair, but okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't turn over Married at First Sight just yet. Like, it has been one short episode. It was 50 minutes. We're all going to be okay.
But the thing is that we already have things that apparently, according to the promos, like, again, so thank you, promo department, I guess, for spoiling this time, are coming to fruition where, as I mentioned before, Jordy decides, okay, well, first off, Jordy has this weird ass convo or confessional in episode 14 where he's like, yeah, I'm a little sick about how comfortable my alliance is.
Jordy is bawdy.
What? What? Jordy is bawdy. He's absolutely 100% bawdy. And it's very Tony-like in that way, too, of like, what do I feel like doing today? So he decides to tell Josh, oh, you won't believe what Mark has withheld from you, oh mighty leader of this alliance. And you think, okay. Now Josh is like, okay, Mark's once again in the doghouse. He's moved into yet another one. Okay, Mark has held this information. But no, it has now made Josh say, oh, wait a minute. Jordy is all over the place. His lips are loose. He's spreading too much information. And now Josh and Jordy are coming after each other. And I don't understand the I'm too comfortable aspect. I understand why Jordy decides to lose this information when he decides to turn on his lions. I have no earthly clue why Josh takes this as a sign that really? Jordy is the one that needs to go.
I don't know. I mean, I think like maybe that's not the relationship that Josh has with Mark. Josh doesn't think he would tell Mark if he had an idol, but he would hope if he were to tell an ally that he has an idol that they wouldn't go spreading it around. And Jordy is also his ally. Like, I thought that that was actually, I mean, really fun and surprising because it's not what you usually see. But also I think just an indication of, I guess, how badly Jordy was misreading Josh and what Josh would expect. It was pretty much a credit to Mark and the fact that, like, Josh would still feel good about him. And I thought was, like, kind of an L for Jordy. But you say that they're coming for each other. I mean, that's not what we see. What I love about it with the with J-Day or Jivaljor is that it's, like, this fun cyclical... it's this fun, like, cyclical paper, scissors, rock thing where Jordy's coming for Mark, but Mark and Sam have their eye on Josh, but Josh is looking at Jordy. Like, that's what's so fun about it. It's, like, where will that break?
Yeah. Well, that being said, let's prognosticate a little. Let's see where it'll break. We have, what, 11 people left. If Jivaljor happens tomorrow, where are people going to side, do you think? Because we have the obvious pairs, right? We know that if Jordy and Josh do indeed go for each other, you would imagine that Jordan is going to stick with Josh, that Jesse is going to stick with Jordy. You know, I would imagine that someone like Shay is probably going to stick with Jordan or Josh and Jordan as well, considering their relationship.
Possibly Michelle, who we saw talking to Jordan, and she just voted for Jordy. So that seems like another one in their camp.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, too. I think she's going to be someone that honestly might become a big swing coming up. Chrissy, do we know? It seems like from
Chrissy,
what Colin was saying,
would be with Sam. So where are Sam and Mark going? I guess not with Jordy.
Well, yeah, if Josh tells Mark, hey, Jordy told me about your idol, then yeah, they're not going with
Jordy.
Like
Josh is trying to protect Mark. So I should really hope that that's the side that they would go with.
Yeah, so it's really interesting how it all breaks down. I mean, the really frustrating thing is that we don't know a lot of these dynamics. Mm. Like, we don't know how KJ feels about Jordy or Josh, just because Jordy has been a very big popping character, but KJ's stuff has been related almost entirely to her sister, and Josh has apparently just woken up after taking a nap for several episodes, edit-wise. So it's really tough, and I think that's also why I'm having a little bit of an odd separation with the whole Josh and Jordy thing as well, is because yes, if this was a fundamental misread, like big miscalculation on Jordy's part, but like the whole, oh, Jordy flaps his lips too much, seems to me incongruous to Jordy's constant confessionals and apparently our apparent perception of what's going on of like, oh, everyone just regards him as some goofy guy. No one realizes that he's doing all the strategy. I guess that's not the case. And again, that just goes back to show what we talked about a couple of hours ago of how the perceptions actually happening out there may not line up with the way people are presenting themselves to us, which is how we take in a lot of characters.
Well, or that is how he was perceived, but so strongly that an action that felt incongruous to that then really shifted that perception. Like, Jordy is just a happy-go-lucky guy, and he and Jesse kind of talk about that at the merge, until, oh, Jordy's, like, had these secrets that he also didn't tell me until now, and then he will also spill those secrets, like, maybe he's more strategic than I thought. So I think that can be a danger when you really kind of go deep undercover into being, like, not the strategic person, but then when you come out as a little bit strategic, it's like, oh, are you really strategic? Because that doesn't fit with how I know you to be, so maybe it's actually more than I think.
Yeah, it was an odd scene. It was an entertaining scene, because, again, I think we're all waiting for that collapse to happen, and it definitely will be. Just sort of questionable moves for both Jordy and Josh's part, I think. And maybe questionable in the way that, again, I don't know how they feel about each other going into this scene. But to your point, maybe we know a little bit more about it when we come out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fine from Josh. I think that if that's the way he wants to take it, and if those are his relationships where he feels mistrust from Jordy but not from Mark on it, I honestly think that's his prerogative. But I think Josh really wants to stay the course because it really behooves him, because he is kind of like prime for the fall and he is like this like leadership type figure who usually kind of takes that shot. He says he wants to stick with it for a couple of votes. I think if Shay loses immunity, she's still a really good target, and I think that could kind of keep it at bay. But I think if not, and certainly after that, like this is happening. If you see that there's like a secret scene on 10 play after the Mel vote, and they're already kind of talking about like the different relationships, like it is cracking. This is definitely, that's what, it's interesting that people are so frustrated by it. And I understand that it was a frustrating episode, but like, we also got like the genesis of something. Like, we also see how this is bubbling under the surface of lava. So surely people like don't think that they're actually going to like pick everyone off. Like, maybe you can say that, okay, well, the women should flip again if they could, but like, wow, there really should be a flip because they should think they're going to get picked off. But we as the audience shouldn't think they're going to get picked off because like, we can see in the confessionals and all the dynamics, those fractures.
Yeah. So again, I could understand why people do it. Again, we sort of have been bitten before a bit by bat in 2016 and then in All Stars of one alliance kind of rolling their way to the end. But I also feel like making that assumption is undervaluing this cast. Again, say what you want to about whether or not they're hooking you as characters, but like, this is a group that is not afraid to just try shit and see what happens. Even down to someone who's more passive, like a Juicy Dave, getting up and just doing all these random things that forces him to play an idol and be the only correct idol play of the season. For someone like Chrissy, who is so like emotionally driven by not voting for Jesse that she ends up voting against the whims of her own brother-in-law than her own quote-unquote blood. These people are capable of doing these things if they have the agency and the desire to. It's just they might not want to for this particular vote. So yeah, I would say like, it's okay, everybody. We're getting something happening. I'm really excited for it because I think it's going to be an opportunity to, I think, crack open some of these dynamics. I think this could be an opportunity for that. If we end with a double date scenario of Mark, Sam, Jesse, and Jordy, who honestly, I think might be the only four potential winner candidates at this point, based on the merge episode, maybe an outside chance of Shay.
KJ?
But I know, because the thing is, you have to look at, you know, I was looking back at the past few seasons, and I feel like no matter what position they were in, the merge episode of every one of these seasons, again, since 2018, when they really pivoted to this new editing formula, they have been visible, right? Whether it be like Shane obviously orchestrating Lydia's blindside.
Well, Shane did that. Like, Shane had a really big merge episode.
But I feel like even in 2019, like, Pia had a fairly, like, she was fairly popping there. Like, I think she had something like five confessionals or something in the merge episode. And I feel like KJ did have that moment at the challenge, but I feel like it may not have been enough for me. I think it's still going to be some combination of Mark, Sam, Jordy, Jesse, I'm probably putting in fourth place at this point, and maybe Shay as a distance fifth. And speaking of Shay, I want to sort of revisit a point that you all had talked about in Talking Tribal this week about this idea of like, okay, can Shay really win out? And I do think when it comes to the merits of like getting rid of Khan or Shay, I don't think the argument should be like, well, we can get rid of Shay later because surely she's not going to win 10 immunities. It's more so a matter of momentum of, okay, if you're safe for a couple of rounds, then you're able to sort of get your feet out from under you, possibly get brought in as a number, and then you don't necessarily need to be safe. Look at somebody like Haley, who, you know, certainly had the wherewithal to win immunity challenges and won, you know, one of the first ones when she ended up coming back into the game, but then lost a couple and she wasn't in danger still. She was able to have that strategic wherewithal and was in a comfortable enough position where it wasn't a, okay, now that she finally lost, we had to get rid of her. Mm-hmm. So I just want to like restate that point that when it came to getting rid of Shay, it's not, oh my God, she's going to Mike Holloway her way to the end and win 10 individual immunities. And I know that when Sam makes that point, when she wins immunity, it's a little bit of like, oh my, you know, her saying, oh no, I told you we had to get rid of her. I don't think the point is that she is going to win out. I think it's more so this idea of she has the capability to win safety for herself. And if she's able to string together some wins, that is more days she is kept in the game. And the more she is in the game, the more she is able to be used as a number.
Mm, I agree. I mean, look, it was the final 13. Like, for Mark to say, like, you know, how are you going to sit next to him at the end? I don't think that was true for either of them. It's not about Shay's run. It's not about how far Khan can take this. It is about the power that Shay gets when she's the one taking up the immunities, when she does get to that next phase of the game, when she's going to be a number there. If she does win for a while, it is about how much Khan, while there as well, can kind of be an asset or a shield, even if we haven't even spoken about. But, like, you know, and is threatening in his own right and might come against you, the way that either of them could work with the people on the bottom in the next vote, you know, Khan with his idol being more powerful there, Shay, who she's working with, like, it really is more of that kind of short-term threat level, but they do have tricks in the bag in their own skills that make those threat levels quite big, even for the short term.
All right, can we talk about some of the fun stuff?
Yeah, let's
here?
Do that. Let's do that.
Let's talk about some of the shenanigans going on. We were still having fun talking about the strategy, but now we got to talk about the goofiness, Shannon. Yes. We got to talk about this merged tribe name.
Okay, that's where you're going to go. We'll go to lava. I want to get your take on it. That isn't just "I have a dream," which
I love it.
Will come true. That's the. Have people not heard the Lava song from the?
So that's a
Pixar
deep pulp because. Right. Yeah, because I believe the short aired before Inside Out, if I recall correctly. So, like, if you weren't watching that, I don't know how many people are individually and independently seeking out Pixar shorts that aren't showing before the movies.
Who didn't see Inside Out? Do they hate joy and sadness and all the other
movies? Well, I mean, listen, do you think Jay would be in with Boys R Us because she has a Jay name?
Yeah, well, that's how it works. She's going to go to the Jivel Jor.
She's going to be riding the Jariat down into the Jivel Jor. Yeah, so Lava. I'm kind of obsessed with it because it's so stupid.
Okay.
First, in so many ways. First, I love the evolution here of the fact that we started with fire last season and now we're going into lava. These poor people must be like sweating their asses off of all
that.
That
is what it is. What just comes
heat.
To mind? Yeah. That literally must be one. I think we've cracked why
so
the
hot.
Two Outback names are fire and lava. The next one's just going to be like searing pain.
Also, okay, so Shay, listen, I appreciate where she is going here with looks like it looks like blood, but it runs like water. You know what also looks like blood and runs like water? Blood. Because it's a liquid.
They run the same.
Yeah, lava is not exactly the perfect merging of blood and water. I don't think if I combine those together, I'm necessarily getting lava. Thirdly, it sounds kind of like Mario is saying love, which I enjoy. Lava. I think that works really well. They're like, we didn't get the love tribe, but we did get the lava tribe. So that was very much appreciated. And yeah, I guess fourth of all, I mean, it's just another random English word. It's another
but they
noun.
Can't, because I don't think that they're meant to do like indigenous words. So I think they could have come up with something better. I mean, not that this is like Hawaiian culture. I see it as just like Lilo and Stitch culture, but like, shouldn't they have done Ohana means family, means no one gets left behind or forgotten. It's a blood versus water season.
I don't see it as Hawaiian culture. I see it as Lilo and Stitch culture.
Literally.
Yeah, and that is called appropriation. That is the literal definition.
Well, it's set like Ohana belongs to Disney. It's trademarked.
No, please don't say it. You stop it. Stop it.
Fine, don't call it Ohana.
Into the ocean. I mean, you could also do, Shannon, you and I once upon a time did an Outwit Outplay Out list with Sasha Joseph, right, about merged tribe names. We talked about season 39 did Lumu Waku, which stood for love you, miss you, really want to kiss you, which was like a very devoted statement that Jack's late father had said to him, that they did that in sort of dedication to him as he had just been booted right before the merge. You could certainly do some sort of acronym. I would say do an acronym of all your names, but I don't know what you do with all the J's.
Just call it J. Just call it J. Just call it J-tron. Just call it Boys R Us. Let's just really lean into.
Would certainly be that was sort of like back in
Blood
Heroes
Brothers
villains, right? Blood Brothers could be good, but wasn't that the thing when they were naming the merge tribe and like they were making jokes about how we'll just call it the villains, and you know, Rupert's like, I'm not a villain, why would I be all the villains?
That would have been hilarious. I honestly think it's not great, but I do think they actually are in a tough spot, because I think that they don't want to, like, basically what I just did, appropriate cultural words. And it's tough because you can't just call it Blutter.
The other reason why I love it is because Shannon is so close to what we suggested for our preseason merge tribe name of Water with a Bloody Aftertaste, which also acronym to WABA. So we had WABA and Lava. Basically like cousins of each other, the Josh and Jordan in Amerish speaking. But I will have to cry a little bit, because people, you had so many good ideas suggested to you. Shannon, I really like to think in another universe, we were looking at the Bin Chicken tribe.
Yeah.
Personally.
We got a question. So do you know what a Bin Chicken is?
Yes. So if I had a memoir, it'd be probably be called Everything I Learned About Australia I Learned from Shannon, Gus, and Bluey. So Bluey is something that I've taken in heaps and heaps of due to my son's involvement in it. And they are several episodes where just ibises show up. That's the bird, right? The ibis, which apparently seems to be sort of like, I don't know, the raccoons of Australia in a manner of speaking, in that they sort of pick at trash. And so they refer to them as bin chickens, which I assume is just some sort of like cute Australian nickname for them, even though they are not chickens. So I did understand the reference that Chrissy made as to them calling themselves the bin chicken tribe, which honestly would have been absolutely incredible, if only to get JLP's reaction to it.
Yeah, like it kind of, there's an idea there, like not on bin chickens, but if you can't, you know, culturally appropriate language, could you take like an animal, you know, like how they have barramundi for the Australian outback season? Like, could you take like some sort of national or state animal and call it that?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly was something like Kucha and Ogakor, weren't they? I mean, I guess those were
like
more
Kookaburra, like it, like literally, like I don't know, anything.
Koala.
Yeah, call them the koalas. Oh my god, the cuddly koalas. Like, it works.
But I feel like the number one pick, while bin chicken was sort of like the jokey riding candidate, why did they not call it the glitter tribe? My god, if there is a noun I approve of, it's glitter. Holy crap. Because you know what you could say? You'd be like, I named this tribe Glitter, and just like Glitter, I'm not going anywhere. I'm sticking here. Even if you want to get rid of me, here I am. It's 3 days later and you can't wash the glitter off your hands and you can't wash me out of this tribe, baby.
Yeah. I'm so glad that we get you here for the merge tribe name every season, because
I didn't realize this would be a trend, apparently, of like, maybe this also speaks to the mental state of these people, that like their decision making skills have degraded to that of a 5-year-old naming the class pet, of like, he's a turtle and his name is Mr. Shelley. And it's like, okay, I guess they're calling our class pet Mr. Shelley, the turtle. Like, it feels like we're at that level of cognitive naming skills when it comes to the tribe. I'm obsessed with it. For safety reasons, I hope they keep filming in Australia. And I think selfishly for naming reasons as well, because I don't know. I honestly do not know where they go from here. I was wondering, are we going to get the survivor tribe or the tribe? No. We are playing Mad Libs at this point, and I'm very pumped to see what fills in the blank on the next noun.
They try their best. It's a beautiful buff. It's really, we got to say that.
Okay, so here's the question. Is it purple? Is it black lined with purple, like what we saw with Worlds Apart? What's your take here? What's the Pantone of it?
I will not answer, because I will get to it in JLP tweet, which will...
Interesting. Okay, did not take JLP for like a hex code coordinator, but sure.
Well, no, I mean, he'll tell you what it is. I want to talk about the fact that they gave away $60,000.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, what is that?
I want to talk about the way that they gave a salary to Khan. What Jordy and Jesse say is 3 times as much as they earned last year. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Well, not only that, it is a salary. Like you said, it's not just one lump sum. It is $5,000 a month for 12 months. First off, I love that moment from them. Like, it sucks that we can't get any personal content from their relationship and their familial bonds, but that was a really deep insight.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's interesting. I watched Tough as Nails. It's a very similar sentiment, how they win, I think, $200,000 from that. And they say that that's what they make so much more. And I think we often overlook the fact that from the blue collar community, like, they are very much underpaid with the labor that they are able to do. And so that being said, Hachi Machi, is this a bomb? This is a big bomb. I guess Khan has really shown of like, hey, no matter what the prize is, I want to win it. Like,
yeah,
I want
60
check it
grand.
Off.
No one would throw the challenge to not be a threat at the merge when it's 60 grand. That is so much money. Give me the target and also give me $60,000. Those two things come together, that's fine. Thank you. I'll take the money.
How much is the runner-up paid in Australia?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because nothing. As far as I'm aware, I'm pretty sure no one except the winner gets anything. So people go, oh, that's more than second place. It's like, well, if JLP slid them a $5 note, it would have been more than second place. So yeah, this is the most that you can win, other than winning the game. I looked it up. It's double as much as the car that they gave to Danny last year, the Isuzu D-Max. The price, I saw that price $31,000 online when I looked it up. It's just so much money. Also, the fact that it's not a car makes it feel like kind of uniquely special. The fact that it is just pure cash. Like, Khan comes out of Jury Villa and calls Amy and is like, I'm giving you $10,000. Like, it is just money. Oh my God. I can't believe they did this. So much money.
It is wild. And I guess
one challenge, like the pressure.
I mean, it's interesting to think about. So you and I, of course, did some production coordination on Survivor South Africa, where one of the sponsors this past season was Outsurance, which is an insurance company. I'm not sure if this sponsor, what's it called, like Save My Money?
Set
or
for
something.
Life. How dare you come onto my podcast and not know the name of the sponsor? They gave away $60,000, Mike. You show some respect.
Yeah, it's the thing. I remember the $60,000 more than I knew it was three words and it began with an S. But I think that, you know, that was very much a question of like, okay, they have to do a sponsor here. What's a twist that can sort of benefit from it? And if you give away money, it feels so unique to the concept of Survivor, because I didn't even think about this until really deep diving into this idea. But with the exception of the car, every reward on Survivor is inside the game. Is, hey, here's a cheeseburger. Here's a trip to a spa, right? It's something you can immediately enjoy. Even the car, it's like, hey, you can drive this around to your next reward or something.
Let's just give Khan a briefcase.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, I don't know. Maybe Khan would be able to use the briefcase later on or something. But the money is something that they can explicitly say, like, this extends outside of the game. And I feel like that is such a unique concept I love it. To the point where I don't know. I might put this out here of, I would be really intrigued to see a Survivor season, and I could understand if people disagree with this, but it's an interesting one season experiment where maybe you offer rewards, but maybe you offer some like prize money attached. It doesn't need to be a lump sum of $60,000, but if you're like best performer in this particular reward challenge gets $10,000 or like $5,000, does that change the way that people interact?
Oh my God, don't make Australian Survivor more physical. Like, that's my only, like, that, like, you're making it more on challenge. Like, it was fine for this one challenge and someone wins the challenge and they get $60,000. But like, I guess it would mean that you would take out all the physical threats so that you could just win the money and think, okay, it's fine. I don't care if I don't have allies. Let me just get as many challenges where I am the like singular challenge threat. I win a ton of money. Take me out anyway. Now that it's a different game and it's not Survivor, and definitely don't put this on Survivor, but a different game like Survivor where there are like money prizes and you have to kind of have relationships, but then also take out threats. Like, there might be some layers to that.
So that's a little Big Brother-y, because in Big Brother, there have been many competitions. There's pretty much at least one competition every season that offers some amount of money.
How much money?
And some, it really varies.
Not
sometimes
60
it goes
grand.
Like,
that's
certainly
like 40
not
grand,
grand
US, by the way, for the international listeners.
Yeah, no, it's usually in the range of like $5,000 to maybe even sometimes like $10,000. But we have certainly seen people become targeted because of it, especially when it's public, of like, hey, they already have this thing. Why do we necessarily, you know, it's a little bit of what we experienced in Guatemala with the car, right? Except this has more of an obvious monetary value. The idea of, well, you have something that you can enjoy, right? Like, the $1 million isn't guaranteed for any of us, but you already had this like addendum to the contract, in a manner of speaking. You don't need the $1 million at the end of the day. I just think psychologically, as a concept, it really intrigues me. And I guess just this idea of, when you know that someone has even just a small amount of money in the game, does that make them a goat? You know, we talk about people having money outside the game in the form of millionaires like Mike White. Obviously, this is a much lesser amount, but on paper, could this have been something that Khan talks up of, like, take me to the end? No one's going to give me $500,000 more. I've already won $60,000.
The thing that's interesting about it is, on Australian Survivor, I think they get paid like a daily rate that's not a lot, and the winner gets $500,000, and now Khan got $60,000. On US Survivor, there is like a payment plan where it's, you get $100,000 for coming second, you get $85,000 coming third, and then like $60,000, which is more than this, is fourth, and then probably about similar to this, because this is Australian dollars, is probably like fifth. And we never see that impacting anything. Like when you see Adam Klein saying like, I'm going out and fire to David Wright if I have to, because I'd rather not even sit at the end. And I spoke about this a bit when like Ben kind of handed over his game in Windows at War, like he gave up legitimate money. But I feel like we never talk about the fact that there's like tens of thousands of US dollars separating those positions. And I don't think it's something that the players really do take into account, because it's about that million. But somehow seeing the 60 grand here, which again is about fifth place in US Survivor, seeing it in like briefcase form and being on like one challenge, it just felt so mammoth and significant, even though, yes, in like the payment plan of US Survivor in that end game, it is like fairly traditional and something we do see in international Survivor.
Because it's guaranteed is what it is.
And it was in a briefcase.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's material. At the same time, like you said, people can certainly, and this happened in All Stars a bit, right? People like Jenna and Rupert say, okay, I'm good going to fourth, going to third.
Yeah, because their payment plan in All Stars, instead of making it a 2 million like they did in Winners of War, they had a million, and then the payment plan just doubled. So everyone was more okay kind of just riding through the pogonging, because then the money actually we saw did make a difference, because that became not just tens of thousands, but at points, I think hundreds of thousands of dollars of difference. And that actually had an effect. So it's really interesting the way that these like monetary prizes can affect things.
Yeah, well, and especially the fact that, again, it's not necessarily, maybe if I make it one more place, then I get more money. It's this thing of, you have this locked in amount of money, and I do not. And what does that say? I think is a little bit different from that pay structure that you're talking about. And it really shows, like you said, it could cut both ways. It could be something where you say, we need to get rid of him. He already has his prize, in a manner of speaking. And this just shows the resume and the checkbook that he is building. Or it could be something you could say, hey, I got this thing. Hell, I mean, if it's Khan's money, could he bribe people?
Well, that's been the question, and I doubt it. Like, can he go to camp and literally be like, guys, I know I'm a target. I don't want to play my idol tonight. $2,000 to all of you. And like, I'm not going to give it to you now because I don't even have it now. But on the other side, I assume because you can't use the prize money in that way, that you can't use any prize money in that way. And it gets messy because, yes, the closest comparison, and I do believe that this was a continuation of the curse, but the closest comparison is the car, which Yaman obviously right. does give to Dreams. But I honestly feel like in that capacity, they wanted good TV and they were going to let it happen. But like Yaman and Dreams, I think there is the anomaly. And I think like not being able to use your prize money, whether it is first place prize money or in the US, like any of like the stipend that you get, I think that that's pretty uniform. And I don't believe that Khan could just go like splash cash around the camp for people not to vote for him.
Yeah, it's tough. I know that there are shows like The Challenge where people sort of make deals behind the scenes to advance others further in the game, to sort of like fall on their sword and then say, okay, and then when you win the money, give me a little bit. Like that has certainly happened a couple of times, but I feel like that all has to happen outside of the game and can't necessarily be done in an environment where you're like filmed 24/7 on something like Survivor. But it is something interesting. Like if Khan had theoretically been given, I don't know, like 12 little medallions that represented $5,000 each, and he was told you can do whatever you want with them, that could be an interesting twist of essentially like in-game fire tokens.
Yeah,
but that actual out of game cash value. Yeah, like garnets in a manner of speaking, right? This idea of like, hey, I can use these to barter or make offers to you, or I could just keep them for myself. But at the end of the day, you're able to cash out your chips and get something out of that. It was just so incredibly unique. It was stunning. I can understand why people would go for it, because again, for some people that might be life changing money, but also, you talked about this, like, you got to imagine that is this sort of like a car briefcase without wheels in a manner of speaking? Like,
it's two
is
cars.
This a new cursed item?
Yeah. I mean, in that one sample size and the fact that I made a lot of my Talking Tribal World of Survivor with Shannon segment about it. So now I'm pretty much all in on the curse. I wanted to say that I wanted so much to play the Biostrat Variety Hour theme song. For those who don't listen to the Survivor South Africa coverage, firstly, how dare you?
How dare you?
Secondly, we have the Biostrat Variety Hour where we talk about the sponsors. And I was like, well, this sponsor gave away 60 grand. Like, let's see how they've been talking about it online. And I was going to play the theme song, but there's no need for that. Because Set for Life just did not at all interact with the fact that they had given away 60 grand. I mean, they had a ton of ads, like, on TV. Like, every ad break. I think the one after they gave away the money was, like, 3 Set for Life ads. But social media did not interact with Australian Survivor even a little bit. So they ruined my segment. And I guess I saved this whole time because this podcast is already very long.
How dare they not strike while the iron is lava hot? This is probably the most amount of eyes that people have on them with just the pure.
I mean, I think it's just like the lottery.
What do you mean?
Like it's just like it's just like a lottery. Like it's like how much advertising you need for the lottery? Just play the lottery. Like what it is, what Set for Life is the fact that it's passed out over the year. I think it's usually it's a certain amount of money that you get every month. I would know more about it had they had more social media stuff. But it's not like Set for Life, I think, is the program. And I think it's like Oz Lotto or such. Again, I would know it had you interacted more online. But that like that's the brand. But Set for Life is the program, which is like where you get, I think it's like they pay out like 20 grand a month for like the rest of your life or something. I don't know. Set for
I
Life.
Don't know, but I feel like the tweets should have been right there, right? Like, oh, you know, I mean, just a congratulations to Khan. You're now Set for Life by winning fun. Congratulations.
Maybe they didn't do it because he got voted out in that very episode after talking about like what a target that would put on his back. And after the fact that probably is a target. And maybe they're like, maybe we just ignore that this ever happened.
Oh, that's interesting, because, you know, people theorize that the reasons why they stopped the car, you know, rewards was because of the car curse. Was mm-hmm. it a, oh, we don't want to get affiliated with this is the reason why a guy gets voted out. Certainly not because of his idol or the fact that he had built himself up as a threat in previous challenges. No, it was due to this one reward of $60,000.
Contributed. I mean, it contributed,
but it certainly was not the straw that broke the Conmole's back.
No, well, don't force it. It's been happening very organically. No, definitely not. Like, as they said, they were talking about it from the pre-merge, but probably didn't help. Probably didn't help that he got 60 grand. Made everyone feel a little better about it. You know, you're taking the briefcase home with you. You're okay.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think he had to keep in the briefcase? Do you think there was money in that briefcase?
No, I don't. I don't believe so.
I wish there, I mean, I guess it was like there was already the merge feast happening, which I loved as well, that they just went to some random ass set of picnic tables in the middle of a river.
I wanted to say about Khan, like I wanted to give the time to it about like what a horrible character loss this was for us to lose Khan.
Shannon, where are you going with that sentence? Please.
No, like genuinely, it's really upsetting. Like he was, I think it's a pretty clear for me, like top six. Sam, Mark, Khan, Chrissy, Sandrina, that's been the top six. But no, it is. Like, from a character perspective.
What an odd metric.
No, it is, because, like, the gap from those characters to the next, I think, is quite significant. And now we've lost, you know, Sandrina and Khan. Sandrina and Khan in successive Sunday nights, which has been painful. I think, you know, Sunday night. Like, it's unfortunate that we're losing Tuesday night. Like, we should be losing Sunday night.
Please strike Sunday from the calendar, Lord Almighty, so we may never see an episode where a character we love goes home.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is... I do think that the tribe loses a bit of its spark. Like, Khan was really, like, clearly it's his third season of television. Like, he was really entertaining. And I think that I just, wanted to eulogize it a little bit because he will just be so sorely missed.
I freaking love Khan. I thought he was such, like, it's just such a bright energy. I loved everything that he brought, and I think it's understandable why maybe he got pegged as a threat because of that, because if he was bringing a very similar temperament to the beach as well, then it makes sense why he was apparently able to have such control over so many people. He had so much joy with everything that he did, and granted, he was able to do a lot of stuff, right? Whether it's find an idol, whether it's be able to win a couple of challenges, whether it's win $60,000, whether it's be blindsided. I'm not sure why. We saw this in the Condorosa as well as in Mel's as well.
I thought you made
why
a they have like I immediately have why, forgotten.
Why they had being blindsided on there as like part of their survivor bucket list. It's an odd thing. It's like I don't know, if you had on your own bucket list like die in style. Like, well, no, dying shouldn't be on the bucket list. No.
Well, you're gonna get to it eventually. Like, I guess that's not really on the bucket list because it's meant to be bucket list before you die. So that would be during dying. So it actually wouldn't.
Yeah, but
count.
The intention of the list in the first place is to not have that item on there. You know, that winning would be on the survivor bucket list. But he was somebody who really, I think, just had his heart in the game and on his sleeve as well. Between like watching his breakdown when Amy left, his joy in being the evil King Kong that he wanted to be. I think he is somebody who out of this cast really could have been playing up that more like, you know, George David-esque character. I think he was one of the first people to give himself one of these sort of eye-rolling monikers.
Well, to be fair, he said he didn't know that people were calling him that in the exit.
But didn't he not call himself that? I thought
they called him that. He said he was like, I wish I had a nickname, and he didn't know that people were calling him King Kong.
But he, I'm fairly sure, did he not have a confessional in the early episodes about how Khan means king in Arabic?
No, Mark said that 50 times, the same confessional 100 times that they replayed. He didn't say it.
I've been Mandela affected. I thought Khan had said that as well for whatever reason.
No, Mark.
I will say, as much as it sucks to lose him, he is going to be an incredible mayor of Condorosa. Like, if there was one person out of the remaining 13 to put as the first member of the jury, I think it has to be him. Much like how I love that it was Nick in 2016 as well. First off, I think he's going to set a fantastic tone where even if there is like a bit of bitterness or resentment happening over the game, like, I think Khan's going to be like, no, come drink a margarita. You know, let me cook you something. You're going to be fine once you get some food in your belly. He has such like a general joviality about him that even when he goes out, like he had no problem with anything that happened. Maybe it's just due to the fact that he knew he was such a big threat and that he had this idol that it was an eventuality. But I think he had such a good head about him that I think he's going to be very receptive to what people are able to tell him. I think he's going to be very welcoming as well. And in general, he's going to be very entertaining. I don't know if he's going to go full like Sean Hampson and David or 2017 and have, you know, them writing a rap for every single person that comes in. But I think Khan is a natural entertainer in both the kitchen and in front of the camera. And I think he's going to bring that out in many ways. And I got to say, I have not done an outwit outplay out list on jury outfits yet. But I got to say, Khan right there is worth playing for. That silk suit. Ooh, baby. Oh, so delicious.
You got to watch his Ponderosa. It's very Condorosa. Sorry. It's very, very funny. It's actually not even Ponderosa. It's Jury Villa. It's definitely not Ponderosa. It's either Condorosa or Jury Villa. Yeah. It's really, really funny because he's like, oh, I can fit into this. And then it like cuts him in confessional and he just looks so good. And it's like such a glob that it actually made me laugh out loud that he's just sitting there and he's just like, it's great. My dad paused the show when he was watching it delayed last night as Khan, my dad loves Khan. Khan walks into the jury looking really great. Everyone's cheering. My dad walks in to be like, I'm just here to say that Khan is so cool.
So cool. All the dads are saying,
I love
it. We have to talk about this. Khan gets nearly a standing ovation when he walks in.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of anyone else, maybe besides like Pascal coming back to the final tribal council of Survivor Marquesas after collapsing in the previous one and being unable to miss it, where people are like, oh, I'm so happy you're here. Like, good God. We thought that they wouldn't be able to one up last season where like everyone was catcalling the jury members as they were walking in. Khan essentially got like stomped down by everybody. Like they were hooting and hollering and like throwing up fireworks. And honestly, he deserved it because he was an absolute serve. Jordan was calling him a snack and everything. I will also say, Khan, if you're listening, I do apologize that you hopped onto the RHAP stream in the 12 for 12 that we did in honor of the anniversary. And you got a glimpse of me rocking my own fashion choice in which I was shirtless, except for wearing a buff on my nipples. And that was a bad first impression, admittedly. A very fitting first impression, just based on my weird temperament, but a bad one. So I do apologize, and I hope you realize that I do have a modicum more taste than what I showed in that evening, but I hope I was able to burn something into your retinas that night.
Okay, well, the first step to getting help is admitting it, but I think that we should talk about the fact that Khan is a juror, the first ever time in Australian Survivor that the jury has started at 13, not 11, which is usually when it happens. And what does this mean? Because blowing it out makes me feel like it's a final three. If it's a final three, we need two non-elims. If it's a final two, we need one because of Nina. But like at the end of the day, it could be a final two with 11 people. Like that's still an odd number. It could be a final three with 10. Like that works well. I don't know. But my running theory is the fact that I'm pretty sure they just stay at a random house at Condorosa. Like it's not a hotel because it's in the outback. And I don't know that they have a cook. And now they don't have to pay Khan. And he's going to be serving up some meals as well as looks. So that is my... Like, Khan goes now, he's like, even if it's in the pre-merch, he's going straight to the jury because he is our cook.
Do you think he realized that he has to use that money to buy groceries as well for Condorosa?
You work for us now, Khan. Like that was actually what you signed when you won the Set for Life reward is that you now work for Survivor.
Yeah, we're you're set for life .. for working for us. That's
exactly.
that's what it was.
So that's my running theory. Do you think this makes it a final three?
I don't know. We're sort of like damned if we do and damned if we don't, right? Because I don't like big juries. I feel like you know, what is fun about the juries, especially in the Australian and South African formats, which is like the individuality, right? This idea that each person comes in with their own individual aspect and reasoning and rationale to vote, which makes it so difficult to estimate and work around it. When it gets bigger, that begins to get a little bit more blurry and obfuscated. So I don't love the idea of 11 jurors.
We still want a final two, like strong preference to an 11-person jury with a final two.
Oh, absolutely. It's the lesser of two evils by far. I could also see them possibly do 11 jurors because if they estimate there's a lot of pairs on the jury, then maybe they feel like that could be an interesting dynamic of like, oh, will these people vote together or will they vote separately this time? We talked about this preseason that they have been wanting a final three for a while now. They are Australian Survivor. They want the biggest things possible. Big challenges, big blindsides, and that includes a big ending as well. They got very grateful that they had one with George versus Haley last year. But one of the onuses of the final three to begin with when it was invoked back in Survivor Cook Islands was that people were unsatisfied with the endings. They felt like in a final two, there was like no chance that a quote-unquote big player would be able to get their way to the end. They were always voted off in third place until, surprise, surprise, they were voted off in fourth place. I would not be surprised.
But then they solved that too, right? No, I'm joking. Now they're voted out in fifth place.
But Australian Survivor has tried to... I would not be surprised if they have tried to work towards that as well, right? Especially when it comes to like being received by that more general audience. It would suck because, again, I do think that's one of the things Australian Survivor has going for it. I mean, production has done so many good things twist-wise this season. Why would they ruin it all by doing a final three? I think they're doing a final three.
Maybe because we've been praising them and they're like, this is strange, and they want to revert to the status quo and make us sad.
That's the thing as well. Like, well, you had your one moment of happiness, but let's bring you back to where we found things back at the end of season six, to being like, I'm happy. But at what cost? Yeah, I mean,
I'm happy, but at what cost? Australian Survivor. That's the tagline.
I think the other thing as well is that there's a non-zero chance they want this possibility of like a pair and a single at the end. And like, oh, does the pair split the votes? And does the single end up taking it all? Sort of like what Laurel hoped for, you know, in the final three with Dominic and Wendell, even though they were not blood or water in any significant way. I would imagine it's a final three because I can't really think of the way they have been fairly conservative with things up to this point, except for last week when, again, it's theorized that maybe they invoked that KJ save when Nina ended up getting pulled out of their circumstances. I can't really think of them finding a way to do two non-eliminations in the next however many weeks.
Well, they're going to have to find a way. I mean, you would think would be something on like a juror removal, but then it becomes a final two with 10 people, or if that's like the one that's left, or it becomes a final three with 9, where you'd think they might want to do 10, although they often do 3 with 9, even though you would think that would break the game, although not necessarily. I mean, it's never happened. It could break the game. Maybe a juror removal is a reason for it. Maybe that's a non-elim. Maybe they're making a bigger jury so that they can give themselves that room.
I mean, that could be something as well, right? If we did what we did in Australian Survivor 2017 of here's an entire episode where someone just gets a power and then they remove somebody. Somebody still gets quote unquote voted out. I mean, listen, I made my thoughts on juror removal very clear.
And I think it's the perfect non-elim. So that's where we sit with it.
That's where we sit with it. I would not love to see it. But again, if our options are huge jury in final two or juror removal or a final three, I would obviously want the final two and the huge jury. Maybe it was just that they loved Khan so much that they pulled an audible, a Condable, and they're like, come on back. Shantae, you stay. You're actually going to hang out in Ponderosa for a little bit.
They're like, how can we not?
Listen, if you do things for the pun, you're doing things correctly from my perspective. So I can't begrudge, as much as we malign the producers for everything going on with the storytelling and the editing, they're doing it for the puns. How mad can I be at them?
All right. Well, it's been 3 hours. I think we got it out. We're going to get to the
chippy. Oh, my God. It's been three hours?
How are you surprised by that? Don't you have a little thing that shows us the time, same as I do?
Yeah, but I don't look at that. I'm too involved in my own thoughts and the lovely conversation that I'm having.
That's so nice to know.
I'm like Shay, where like I get in the zone and then when I look over, I immediately collapse everything around me.
Yeah, there you go. Well, take it away, Jacob Sega Weinstein and MC Kala.
1, 2, 3. One, two, three.
All right, so this was a hard week. I felt, you know, there was some really messy emotional stuff, but like no one was amazing strategically, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I felt quite strong about the three. Don't know if it's going to be controversial, but I'm going to give it to Josh. I feel that he, well, he's leading the charge and he may take the fall for that, for being the clear leader. But I feel like then I'll criticize him then. Like for this week, through the turbulence of this merge, he
no,
was like, yeah,
do not
no,
feed
I,
this
I,
shit.
I can't
do
not. Not I,
the,
what I'm talking about, I don't know anything
else
about
it. This.
No, but he was flying the plane through it. They have, they're at least flying safely right now. And yes, there's no transparency. Like the way that he's like, you know, we picked up a few members, like he's laying out not just like the minority of it, but like also like something of a hierarchy even possibly. And like something's not working when he's saying like, oh, I'm just like letting them know that they, oh, Mel and Michelle are making them think they have power. They don't think they have power. But again, he's defending. He split well on that second vote. The ship / plane is being steered. Geordi gives him that info. I think Geordi misreads him. I think that he has the upper hand in that interaction. And I think it was a good week from Josh. I'm going to give two to Sam, who stayed the course, I think, in a very difficult situation. She's very aware of her situation. Like, even in things like, I criticize Mark for saying that Khan, you know, had pulled the wool over Sam's eyes. Sam, I think, gives a little bit of, like, the benefit of doubt to Mark, where she's like, I can't help but wonder, Carrie Bradshaw style, but she's like, I can't help but wonder.
I had that in my notes, too.
Yeah. I'm like, I remember exactly the word. Because it was, yeah, I can, like...
Oh, wait. Could they, if we gave episode titles to episode 13, could we call it Khan's Just Like That?
That's, what, that doesn't, I don't know. You would call, I can't help but wonder. You'd call it That Would Khan.
No, but now it's more of a Sex and the City reference in that way.
No, but she couldn't help but wonder ever. I guess it's couldn't. I don't know. The puns, it's been 3 hours, Mike. I'm delirious. The point is that she, I mean, like, she was approaching with a deft touch, being like, maybe, but also seeing, like, the cracks in the boys, and is right about that, I think.
Oh, yeah, they're seeing it. Well, that's the thing as well. Where are the butts this season? Is it
what?
Just, it's too
There were
hot.
Tons of butts. What are you talking about?
Where, I've not been watching the butts. Where are
what,
the
in
butts?
The water, like with the whale stuff? With Geordi?
A little bit. A
there's
little
been
bit
butts.
With the
there's been enough butts. There's been, it's...
Never enough butts from my perspective.
Okay, well, that's like a, that's, there's, it's not the, like, the last season there were no butts, and this season there have been butts. In the middle of my chizzy mind, the butt question? Okay.
Listen, it pops into my head, so I just have to say it.
Yeah, anyway.
I'm like Josh, I'm transparent.
2 points to Sam for the reasons I just gave. Tough situation, but is still just constantly aware. And also a tough week, but also I think just staying the course as much as she should. I back her decision to stay as a unit with her husband, as hard as that is, and I don't think she should have flipped or tipped Khan off for any of those, like, fun distractions that actually implode your game and are way too chaotic for, like, the strong game that Sam is playing. I will give a point to Mark as well, and I know that people, you know, didn't love the emotionality of it, but I see the Khan move just for him. I do see that Khan is a threat. I just think that beyond the game, and also for his pair with Sam, I think Khan could offer a lot. I think he's shielded. He is a power player. He is a strong instigator of the action right now. And for these big guys like Josh and Mark, the fact that their strategy has worked to get them to these, like, powerful positions where they weren't on the chopping block this week in any realistic way speaks to how well they've done. I will give an honorable mention to Shay for saving herself in the challenge, and Jordan for the conversations he's having for, you know, with Shay, with Michelle, and kind of seeming like he's talking to people on the bottom. If I'd seen more of it, I feel like that could have become a point, but it's just not, like, a perspective I was given. And what are your points? I'm not going to talk about butts in the middle of your points. I will let you say your piece.
I'm very glad you talked over me saying shaving herself, because I feel like that should go unmentioned.
I didn't know that's what you... I thought you said for being herself, and I was like, oh, that's nice. For shaving herself. My God, Mike. My God.
My con. All right, so... I agree and disagree on some points here. I'll go with my usual method of going 1, 2, 3 to build up to the big explosion at the end. I'm going to go 1 on Mark as well, because listen, God, this was far from a perfect week for him. He had, honestly, the worst play that he had was with his wife, which is a wild thing to say, but I still cannot see a reason, and I'm excited to hopefully hear from him at some point, either during or after this season, as to, like, was it a slip of the mind, were there strategy behind it, but not telling your own wife that you have an idol and waiting an entire cycle of the sun around this planet to come back around and for you to tell her is absolutely wild to me.
At least his biggest mistakes of the week were with someone who is legally committed to him.
I mean, I guess so. That's the thing, is that as much as you might dislike the way that he approached things from a personal perspective, which I certainly do, I do not think I can dispute the control that he had this week, right? Like, at the end of the day, it was not the prettiest, but he got what he wanted. He got Khan out, even if you don't necessarily agree with the rationale. He does still have Sam there, who does still have relationships with people on quote-unquote the other side. It's not like cutting Khan out just completely loosed those people out as free radicals. And I put him up here on the board as opposed to somebody like Jordy, who did not show up here, because somehow, for some reason, despite Mark being outed for having an idol, it didn't blow back on him as of yet. Mark is still able to survive despite the fact that this information has now gotten out there. This could have been something that very much sunk his game. It seemed like it was being alluded to that last week of like, okay, this is going to be something that really ends up being the Achilles heel for Mark. It could still be. We could see a really schism between these two couples where, you know, Jordy decides to turn on Mark in that moment. But for at the moment, he had a good week, even if it was not the one that had him looking the most serene, especially when it came to his actual in real life relationship. I'm going to give 2 to Josh here. Like you said, I think that, you know, what he was able to do was very good, very impressive. We have not seen a lot of him, but the brief glances that we do, we're like, oh, yeah, you're smart. We talked about this in the preseason, right? And we said that this could possibly be something working against him, that he is calculating. It seems like forever, whatever it's worth, whether it's him, whether it's Jordan, whether it's both, he has the relationships and the trust to be able to come across as gamey as he does without drawing major ire. However, the reason why he does get my 2 is because something's coming, in a manner of speaking. And I know that that's talking more about next week than this week, but I certainly incorporate longevity into this stuff. And I feel like it is never good when you're at tribal council, especially this early on, the second vote after the merge, and somebody points at you and says they're going to win it all if they get to the end of the game. I feel like that is always a kiss of death. And maybe it might not happen in the next vote, it might happen later on, but I have to imagine this is now something that has become apparent in everyone's heads, including the people in his very alliance that are looking to possibly vote him out in the next round. And so I think that he did a really impressive job in these 2 votes, but I dock him a bit for what this has sort of set up for what's to come. And maybe he'll have a more sudden departure, if you will, from the terminal. And 3, this is going to come out of freaking nowhere.
I'm so interested.
But I was really thinking about I completely agree with you. It was a really tough week. It's been a really tough season for Chizzy Points, because I think that people have been, and what's really interested me about this season as well as last season is people are playing incredibly flawed games. Like, they are messy. And it is really fun to watch people make mistakes and not feel like our job is already done for us. You can come on here every week and be like, yeah, we already know who it is. And I sort of looked around and I'm like, okay, who did reasonably well this week? Maybe wasn't the face behind either one of the boots, but it is in a good position and was able to, like, you know, have some pop out moments. My 3 points go to
Jesse.
Just go ahead. Yeah, you got me right on the money. $60,000 to you. It's going to Jesse due to the fact that he was good at everything and not good at anything. He, you know, while he won the challenge, it seems like nobody is really drawing eyes to him on the way that they did with Emmett. And now that shows that he is also very capable of winning those challenges that become very populous throughout the post-merge of Australian Survivor. Even in other ones where it's like, hey, run this obstacle course and then do this puzzle, it seems like Jesse is someone who could at least be in the hunt for that. He's someone who obviously got brought into a very good position within Boys R Us. Now, look, if Jordy does indeed get targeted, that could be bad for him, especially if they're like, oh, Jordy might have an idol, so let's go for Jesse instead. I could see a reason why he might go out there. But otherwise, I think he is very firmly shielded. He has his brother, who, as we see, is taking bullets right now over him. He has someone like Sam who can vouch for him in an incredibly powerful couple. I do feel like even if Jesse loses Jordy, I think he's in a really good position. And he wasn't at the forefront of any of the questionable decisions that were made this week by a lot of the other people in this season. So, or in this episode, I should say, even though he definitely made some questionable decisions last week, as you sort of talked about with Nick about the Ben stuff. So, yeah, it's just sort of due to like being there, being pretty good at a good amount of things, and not sticking out badly in any way. Jesse ends up at the top of my Chizzy points this week.
Yeah, I like it. Actually, like, I did consider Jesse, and maybe I didn't give enough thought to, like, kind of how out in front he was, but you're right, he's behind the scenes, and he's not doing anything wrong, and I don't know that you can say that about pretty much anyone else, so, and, you know, I guess other than people we, like, really don't see, and we are getting a bit of what Jesse is doing, so I like it. I like that he got points there. So the points are Sam 16, Nina left on 9, Jesse's now up to 8, Mark on 7, Sandra left on 6, Josh just went up to 5 with his first points, Jordy on 3, Michelle on 2, Khan on 2, he left on 2, and KJ on 2. So those are the points, and let's get to some quick JLP tweets, because I teased this, but we're about to find out what color the tribe is. Actually, in this massive marathon podcast that we did, my merge tribe buff was delivered and is right next to me, so I can actually see it. It's very beautiful.
Oh my God. Yeah. The time since, it's been 84 years. It's already been next Sunday already to watch Australian Survivor. We've been podcasting for 5 days straight.
I mean, it's black with like a purple pattern, and like looking at like the All Stars one, that it was a green tribe, and it was the same that it was black with like a green pattern. But JLP says lava tribe. I was thinking something more like purple tribe. So it's purple, which was infuriating, obviously.
But is it? Is it purple though?
Yeah, no, the same way that the Kalo All Stars tribe was green. It's the same thing.
Right. And the same way like the buff in Worlds Apart is purple, or like how in Winners at War, right? It was a black buff with like yellow outlines, so they made the lower third yellow.
Yeah. So Joe Mack responded saying, "You're just trying to annoy some podcasters, aren't you?" And JLP liked it. So JLP, thank you for sticking around well over 3 hours into this podcast to get to the JLP tweets, because it looks like he's listening.
That being said, I will say it again. You are very horny, sir. You are an incredibly horny man. And that's okay. And that's okay.
What podcast was that from?
That was from last season when I came on.
Okay, the last season. All right. Everything's blurring into one. JLP said, KJ fighting for her little kids while Jesse is fighting for his little biceps. How does JLP come up with this crap? Thought I'd write this before someone else did. As if that wasn't like an amazing line. So it's confusing that he's
incredible.
Putting it down. Yeah.
Little biceps is a term I have never heard in my life, but now I'm so glad it exists in my lexicon. Thank you, JLP, for putting those syllables together to give us the term little biceps.
He also said, Khan, you were cooking up a hell of a Survivor recipe. You just forgot to season it with that tasty idol. Tasty from last week. Another example that he's listening to the podcast. JLP, can you leave a review?
Now here's the thing, Shannon. Nick started this trend. Do you want to give an adjective-based nickname to all of your guests from here on out?
I feel like you want one.
I mean, I'm sort of
dirty.
Of like one if you're. I didn't dirty even Mike. Need to finish my dirty Mike. Yeah, yeah. Sounds like I don't know. Sell carburetors out of my garage, but yeah, I'll go with Dirty Mike.
Well, I guess it was Dirty Harry, but it feels weirder when it's Dirty Mike.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I think it's sleazy. Maybe some sort of. So, no, well, that's worse.
Strange.
Strange Mike. I'll go with Strange Mike.
Strange Mike. I don't think that's
no. I think it has to be two syllables. So let's go with Weirdo Mike.
Weirdo Mike. Okay. I don't know why you were so quick to just like not go with sleazy. Okay. Last JLP tweet. He said, "Of course, Khan has Hugh Hefner PJs for jury. Was this unfair? Was that's unfair? I think on the stylistic choice of what Khan is wearing.
I mean, I previously owned a pair of silk pajamas in my day. They did look like pajamas.
Of course, Dirty Mike did. Sleazy
yeah, and I dirtied them up. Oh, that washer. That washer wish I got paid sick. Got paid $5,000 a week with the work I was giving it at the end of the day.
Ew, what? I literally don't even know what you're talking about anymore. Continue with the story.
I had pajamas, so I thought they were pajamas at first, Emily. Now, look, okay. I'm not the most fashion-forward person, so I was a bit dense to it as well. But yeah, taking several looks at it, it is 100% a suit, and I really admire that, because I have to imagine that's like a personal tailoring, right? Like, I don't think anyone is actively selling that.
Why?
Well, like Khan, I think went to probably get that tailor to himself. Like I don't know. Are there silk suits?
Yeah, I think so. We have lost the plot, but that is the end of the podcast. I'm so glad we could end it on that note. Sleazy.
Wait, I have one more thing. Oh, I have one more thing. I found a 25th contestant, Shannon.
The doctor, hot medic.
No, Shin. I guess I found a 26th contestant.
Well, then we didn't have Mel and we didn't have Jay, so it's back down to 24. A 24th contestant.
I don't know if you saw this. I don't know if this person, quite frankly, has popped up anywhere else, but there is a very specific shot in episode 13 in the sequence where they are coming back from the immunity challenge, where it cuts to a shot of the top of a waterfall and standing over it is a bald man in a Speedo who is wielding some sort of trident.
Oh, so he's meant to be that he wasn't just like hanging out on that cliff?
Yeah, wait, I'm going to try to like upload this and send it to you because it is truly wild. I don't know who this man is. I don't know what his story is. I don't know why they included him in there for flavor because usually, again, the B-roll is like, oh, here's an owl. Or here's, you know, a snake in the grass, not here's a man in his like athleisure wear holding a weapon casually while looking over these plebs. I took a screenshot of it. I am astounded. I don't know who this man is, what his story is, or where he comes from.
That's what they want you to think.
Do you think, is he, I don't know, could he be like the spirit of Survivor? Could the big final twist be like, okay, it's not a final three or a final two. It's a final one. And this person has to wrestle this man in order to claim the $500,000.
Mike, it's been 3.5 hours. It started with Mel as a vampire. And honestly, there was a lot of merit to that take. But over the time of the podcast, your takes have devolved to, will they wrestle this naked man for money?
He's not naked. He's wearing a Speedo.
Oh, I assumed he was naked. Anyway. Because of Dirty Mike. Mike, you've lived up to the many nicknames, I think. Weirdo Mike. Strange Mike.
Just don't call me Sleazy. That's
Sleazy
my tagline.
Just don't call me Sleazy.
Don't call me
What's
Sleazy.
What's mine? I don't have a nickname. Oh, I shouldn't ask you because I just gave you so many insulting ones.
Well, no. What's going to happen is I'm going to come back for the finale.
Pedantic?
And then I give you a nickname. That's
Why can't
how
I have
works.
One now?
Well, we have to wait. It has to simmer. Right? This is like Mark's targeting of Khan, right? It has to take days and days and weeks before it ends up becoming ready and fully marinated.
This will encourage the listeners to give me their own nicknames, and I'm scared of that. I feel like we should just lock it in now.
Did you almost say incarnate?
I tried to. To be fair, I didn't eat before this podcast because it was morning time and now it's nighttime. So
wait, is that
I've been fasting. I've been...
I can eat before this podcast, humble brag.
No, I didn't eat. I didn't have breakfast because it was like 11 a.m. But now it's like in the middle of the afternoon. I haven't had lunch. What are we doing? I need to go.
You have to go eat lunch. I have a date with a washing machine and a man with a Speedo and a trident, personally.
What? Okay. Mike, where can the people find you online? Find out what you're doing. Avert their eyes, I guess.
Well, listen, no, I already told Khan that he should have done that a couple weeks ago. Listen, if people want to follow the weird, silly things that I'm doing, you can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. I have been talking U.S. Survivor for a long time now. I'm actually in a little bit of a break before the U.S. season starts. But if you want to know anything and everything about Survivor 42, come on down. You're set for life at parade.com, where I have interviews with every single one of the 18 cast members that I did preseason. I also got together with Rob Cicernino for 9 combined hours, 3 separate podcasts where we break down the interviews, talk about their chances, bring in stuff from their bios, their other videos, etc. I'm really excited for that cast in particular. So it's going to be a very fun time next week. In the middle of the plug, Shannon, let me deviate a second. How do you feel about the fact that you are now going to be covering 2 shows at once when US Survivor comes back next week?
I mean, I've done South Africa and Australia at the same time. I've done US and Australia with All Stars. And also it's 2 a week now for Australian Survivor. Like, that's so chill. So I feel good about it.
Let's talk about that. Is there a particular reason why? Is there a show coming on Tuesdays that 10 wants to put on?
Yeah, it's about dogs. It's called Dog House or it's
what?
No, it's not called Dog House. It is about dogs.
I was like, does Mark host it?
Yeah, like, that people were saying because it was like the little ad and like when they cut to Mark, like the ad came up. But I don't think that was on purpose because that would be crazy if it was.
I mean, that would be wild synergy of like, oh, he was in the Dog House. Yeah. No, of course, no, they're bringing on a Survivor contestant. It's probably Lockie, right? He's on his third show at this point.
He's on SAS right now. Don't watch it. Be watching Survivor.
Is that a direct competitor to it?
Yeah. On at the same time. Don't watch it. Don't even talk about it.
Okay.
Oh my God.
All right. Okay. We don't talk about Lockie. No. Yeah. And then when the season starts, we're just getting started, people, because I'll have exit press going on. I'll be doing the RHAP B&B with Liana. So if you're in the mood for more stupid stuff, I say, oh man, we got that in troves. Open up a whole briefcase full of that with Liana Boris over on the B&B. Also, in the realm of reality television, The Amazing Race is coming to its conclusion this week. I'll be doing a podcast with Jessica Lease and Rob Cicernino, recapping the finale. Probably doing a tar pit as well with Jess that weekend, as well as exit press with all four teams. If you checked out Celebrity Big Brother, and good luck to you if you did, I did interviews with nearly all of the house guests there as well. And still, more stuff happening over on post-show recaps. The newly LASIKed Josh Wigler and I are counting down episodes of Lost as ranked by the two of us and the listeners of Down the Hatch. We've been doing a sort of like a countdown guessing game series of podcasts that has been very fun. We're taking the week off of that due to Josh's eye surgery, but are coming back next week to do a big old batch of those. I'm finishing up coverage of The X-Files with my wife, Angela. I recently finished coverage of an Amazon Prime series called The Legend of Vox Machina. And I'm doing coverage of another Amazon Prime show on March 11th, Upload, which is a series created by Greg Daniels of The Office, of Parks and Rec, of King of the Hill. That is a comedic slash sort of dramatic look at a world in which the afterlife exists virtually, where you can upload somebody's personality before they die. And that's where they live in perpetuity as long as you have enough money. It's a really interesting show, really interesting world building. I'm getting together with Jess Sterling to do coverage of that. We did a kickoff podcast where we gave sort of like our spoiler-free takes as to why you would enjoy the show, what to check out about it. And then we're going to do a season one recap to catch you all up on what happened with the show slash remind you what happened this coming week before coverage kicks off daily next week. So as you can imagine, a lot is happening and I am blissful at this point. I am so happy that I get the opportunity to do what I get to do, including getting to come on and talk with you, Shannon, and get to receive memos from you about the artful choices that I get to make in making multiple winner picks, all of which are still in the game at this point, I will say, or Shay.
The memo was so long ago that it feels like another lifetime for me. But I want to say that I am on memo. Thank you to the people again who have ordered memos. You can always get that. Given the takes, you know, giving 6-minute videos about my favorite seasons and why, including my US rankings, top 12 that I've never given on a podcast because I don't like people to judge my rankings. Even though they're super, super, I don't know, traditional, like they're not controversial, but still, follow me at Shannon Gates. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap Up feed for all the content. Next week, I will have Simon Mee talking about week 6 for those 2 episodes. So that'll be a fun time, especially with everyone going home with idols in their pocket. It's a good time for Simon to come in and we can re-traumatize him again. I'll be talking a little bit of Survivor 42. Of course, Survivor Global will start. And we will have Hayley Leak on for the first week of that next week. But then before that, even I'm going to be doing the RHAP draft. I've been listening to your content, Mike, to prepare for that. Cause it's very competitive.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I was also on Post Show Recaps myself doing the community building podcast with Josh Wigler and Jess Stone.
Yes.
Paradise of Human Memory, which is one of my favorite episodes of television. And the exits, as I said, we spoke to both Khan and Mel. That should already be out. And Australian Survivor Talking Tribal, which we've referenced, out as well. So a lot of content coming at you. Thank you for everyone who's checked it out. And Mike, thank you so much for talking way, way too long. Absolutely too long about this stuff with me.
Listen, it's not even long enough from my perspective. I could go on for another 6 hours if it is not obvious enough from the way I'm just speaking at an incredibly fast pitch and speed. I love talking with my best friend, Shannon Gus, about anything and everything, but Survivor especially. And this is a bit of a warm-up. Granted, we're going to cool down for a little bit, but Shannon, once Survivor South Africa happens, man, we are running hot as lava. The volcano's gonna be open, baby.
You know what they say, it looks like blood runs like water. That's what everyone says about volcanoes. So
right. I asked a seismologist and he said, okay, the way to recognize lava in the wild is if it looks like blood and it runs like water.
Oh,
it's
no,
lava.
That was also just blood. So a lot of Survivor happening. I hope you guys enjoyed this. It was a lot. We appreciate you. If you're still here 3.5 hours in, we appreciate you very, very much. Thank you so much for all the support. Thank you, Mike, again. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the swammer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Rubli.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.